Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Well, see again. The people who classify themselves as white are not happy with their appearance. Now, they've taught us to be unhappy about our appearance. You see, but they're very unhappy about their appearance. I think there's an article in the handout about a woman who was, white woman who was in Hawaii, and she said that being around the Hawaiian people and the Asian people, and she said she was tall and white and pale. She said she felt like a freak. And so then she started getting involved in genetic science.
One of the most eagerly awaited medical experiments has begun in Nashville. For the first time, scientists have used the gene editing technique called CRISPR to try to treat a genetic disorder in the United States. NPR is the only news organization to have learned the identity of the first patient and to talk with her. NPR health correspondent Rob Stein is here with more. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Ari.
Who is this woman and why is she undergoing this experimental treatment?
Her name is Victoria Gray, and she's 34 and lives in Forest, Mississippi with her husband and four kids. And here's a little bit about what she told me about herself when I met with her recently at the Sarah Cannon Research Institute in Nashville.
Well, I don't work. I'm a stay-at-home mom. But before I got too sick, I was working in the beauty department at Walgreens, and I was going to school to become a nurse. But all that got put on hold for health reasons.
Tell us about her sickness. What is her condition?
Yeah, so Victoria has sickle cell disease, and it's a terrible genetic disease that primarily affects African Americans in the United States. And instead of having normal red blood cells, you know, the cells that carry oxygen in your body, sickle cell patients have a hard, sticky, it's a sickle-shaped red blood cell that causes terrible bouts of agonizing pain and can cause lots of really serious health problems.
Well, I'm high risk for strokes, and I'm high risk for heart attacks, and these things can happen to me in a blink of an eye. And my pain episodes can just come on after the blue. I can just be laughing, and next minute I'm crying, you know, in some of the worst pain that you could ever imagine. It's a heavy load to carry, you know.
That sounds really tough. So how are doctors trying to use CRISPR to help people like Victoria Gray?
Right. So this is how it works. The doctors, they take cells out of the bone marrow of sickle cell patients, and they use this CRISPR editing tool to edit a gene in those cells to turn on the production of something called fetal hemoglobin, which is usually only produced by fetuses when they're in the womb and babies for a short time after they're born. And then they infuse billions of these genetically modified cells from the patient back into the bodies, hopefully to help treat their disease. Dr. Haider Frangoul, who's running the study in Nashville, he explained a little bit more about how this is going to work.
What we are trying to do here is we are trying to introduce enough fetal hemoglobin into the red blood cell to make the red blood cell go back to being happy, squishy, and not sticky and hard, and can go deliver oxygen where it's supposed to.
So she is the first sickle cell patient to get this treatment. What does it involve? What was the process like?
Yeah, so parts of it were really pretty hard. She had to go through chemo, first of all, to wipe out her own bone marrow to make room for these CRISPR-edited cells. And then Dr. Frangoul infused more than 2 billion of those gene-edited cells into her body. And this was just a few weeks ago.
They had the cells in a big syringe. And when it went in, my heart rate shot up real high. And so that was a was a scary, tough moment for me. And just after that, I cried, but it was happy tears.
What was that feeling like?
It was amazing and, you know, just kind of overwhelming after all that I had went through to finally, you know, get what I came for.
And Victoria, she calls her new gene edited cells, she calls them her supercells.
Why do you call them supercells?
Well, I have sickle cell, so just replace it with a better S. It's just supercells.
Rob, it sounds like there's a lot of potential here, but what are the concerns?
Yeah, so, you know, there are always concerns about any new experimental treatment. Is it safe? Will it work? And this is all really magnified with something that's this new. Here's Lori Zoloth. She's a bioethicist at the University of Chicago, and I talked to her about that.
I am optimistic about the success of CRISPR. I just want it to be done carefully.
Yeah, so they're going to monitor very closely. First of all, to make sure the edited cells are safe, they're not causing any health problems on their own. And then to try to get any clues to see if they might be working. And researchers are planning to study dozens of patients at medical centers in this country and in Canada and in Europe. It could take months and maybe even years to know how well it's working. And I talked to Victoria about that. She says she knows the risks and that it is a very early study, but she can't help but hope that it helps her.
I feel like the way everything happened, it was kind of fate, and I feel special to be the first to do it.
And we're going
to
be checking back with Victoria just to see how things are going.
It's NPR's Rob Stein with that exclusive story about CRISPR gene editing technology. Thank you, Rob.
You bet, Ari. It's the sport of kings, better than
diamond rings, football. All right, now to the gridiron. Full contact football for young people in California just got sacked with a new regulation. Yesterday, Governor Newsom signed into law a bill that reduces the amount of time kids can practice while tackling. Now they can only do it in just 2 30-minute sessions every week, and full contact play is still off limits during the off season. It's part of the broad effort to minimize head injuries in players that can have lifelong effects. Now, here to explain more about this new law, we have its author, Democratic State Representative Jim Cooper from Elk Grove in Northern California. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, good. All right. Now, this is actually more restrictive than the first law on this that was passed in 2014. That's where kids in youth football were limited to just 2 90-minute windows of full contact play during practice each week. Why did you want to go even further than that?
Well, it falls in line with the high school players. Those are the current rules right now. And we didn't want to do it in a vacuum. So we actually worked together with the Youth Football Alliance. So it was a team effort in bringing this legislation forward, because legislation last year potentially could have banned youth football.
What is the age range that we're talking about with that, with this regulation?
So anyone under high school. So Pop Warner, essentially.
Pop Warner. Okay. Now, you used to play football in high school yourself. Looking back, do you think that you as a kid would take these concerns about head injury seriously back then?
No, not at all. Coaches are claiming property because the bill doesn't take effect until 2021. To give coaches time to get the training. That's really a big issue, making sure kids know not to lead with their heads.
What's your message then to the kids out there who play youth football, who maybe want to play and don't think this law is necessary, and actually to their parents as well?
So it wasn't anti-football. We did it with all the youth football organizations, the umbrella organizations in California, and really worked with them to get a good piece of legislation put forward, and that was the issue with it. Concussions are a big issue. A lot of folks are concerned about it. It happens in football and many, many other sports. And this just makes sure that we ensure our kids' safety and train coaches properly.
Because, Assemblymember, one of the arguments is, how do you know what it feels like to get hit on the football field if you don't actually do it in practice once in a while? And I realize that you are giving a window of time, but, I mean, at what point is it overreach?
So I don't think it's overreach, because right now those are the rules that the high schools play by, the exact same rules. So I guess my question is, should the youth, or small youth, or young kids be hitting more than the high schoolers? And high school is still effective with those type of rules.
We're talking to Democratic State Representative Jim Cooper from Elk Grove in Northern California. Do you think you can foresee a time, Assemblymember, when there is no contact allowed save for just the games?
I hope not, and I don't want that to happen. And that was a problem last year. We faced a bill that potentially would have done that. We want to make sure we maintain it and do it safe. And like I said, I have to reiterate, it was done in conjunction with the Youth Football Association. So the California Youth Football Alliance, through the buy-in from coaches that coach at that level.
Well, isn't that heading in that direction? The window continues to get smaller and smaller. I mean, it seems reasonable to think that eventually no contact will be the way it is.
Well, I hope not. That's not the intent of this legislation. We just want to make sure it's safe and really focus on instruction.
Now, does this move ultimately change the game of football? Maybe perhaps sending a message to a generation of kids and their parents that if you're playing football at any level, whether it's Pop Warner, high school, college, it is really at your own risk.
Well, it is. And there's a lot of studies that are out still. The information is not conclusive. But we do know with some of the issues that went on with concussions, it is an issue. So we have to address it. We can't just turn the blind eye. We want to do it thoughtfully and constructively in the way we bring forward the legislation.
That's Democratic State Representative Jim Cooper from Elk Grove in Northern California. Thank you very much.
Decades ago, I said that, you know, I didn't know much about Brazil, still don't. But from what I heard from people who had been there, or people who were from there, because I'd heard a long time ago that outside of Africa, the largest population of black people is in Brazil. But you don't ever see them on television, even on the Brazilian programs. It's every now and then, I mean, somebody will pan the camera and you'll spot them on the at Mardi Gras time. But where are they the rest of the time when they make the advertisements and do all the hoopla and whatnot? You wouldn't think that it's, you know, it was just, you would think that there's just a smattering of black people in Brazil. I mean, when I say black people that look like black people in Central Africa. Mm-hmm. But the numbers are huge. But they all push back up in those hills. But when it comes to classification, from what I understand, Brazilians will tell you, we don't have any discrimination here. You know, everybody's the same. Color don't make no difference here. This
At
is Brazil.
52 people have been killed in a prison riot in Brazil. Local media say gang members from one wing invaded another section of Altamira Jail in Pará State. Officials say rival gangs fought each other for 5 hours and 16 of the dead were decapitated. Others died from smoke inhalation after parts of the prison were set on fire. Our correspondent in Sao Paulo, Daniel Galas, told me more.
It all seemed like a rebellion at first, that all inmates were together, you know, trying to better the conditions that they live in. But then it clearly emerged that this was actually just a smokescreen for what was happening. A fight between these two rival gangs. One of them managed during the rebellion to walk into the other part of the prison and kill a lot of their rivals. It's quite common in Brazil to have factions in prisons. A lot of these factions control organized crime from inside prison. So this is a turf war between two criminal gangs that actually want to have control of what's happening outside prison, organized crime, drug trafficking, and so on.
And you say it's common to have factions, and this killing, shocking as it sounds, is far from being the only such killing in Brazil's notoriously overcrowded prison system.
Yes, Brazil has the third largest prison population in the world. It's just behind China and the United States, and this is a growing population. Just a few years ago, Russia had a bigger population, but Brazil overtook Russia. And all these prisons are overcrowded. They have about twice as many prisoners as they should have. Back in May, not far from this prison, there was another massacre, similar conditions, where 55 inmates were killed back then. So the second very large-scale massacre in a prison in Brazil in just a matter of months, which shows just how bad the situation is for these inmates.
Daniel Galas in Sao Paulo.
What they give you, blood?
3 months, man.
What you doing in here anyway? You ought to be home with your mama. How old are you, boy?
13.
Damn. Bastards must be running out of niggas to arrest.
There are some states where skipping school can get a kid locked in jail. Some kids can also face juvenile detention if they run away from home. The states that have such laws call them status offenses. In other words, these are acts that are only considered crimes because of the offender's status as a minor. One of the states that enforces such offenses is Kentucky, which is now working to change its approach. NPR's Cheryl Corley reports.
When it comes to juvenile misbehavior, the status offense that tops the list is truancy, kids consistently not going to school.
I missed, I think it was like 98 days.
That's Kelly Schaus, 22 years old now. She has a ready smile and deep dimples and lives at the Brighton Recovery Center for Women in Northern Kentucky. Formerly addicted to heroin, she served several stints in jail on a possession charge. When she was in eighth grade, she ran with her older sister's crowd and rarely attended school.
You know, they send your parents letters and stuff. You know, your parents would usually get in trouble if they don't go to court, but I basically did not listen to my parents, what they said.
Still habitually truant in high school, her mother signed off on her dropping out. Shao says she was thankful a judge ordered her to complete community service instead of jailing her.
I mean, I've had friends, like when I was in school, went to juvenile hall and they come back worse, some of them.
That's a dilemma that Kentucky officials are trying to change by dealing with issues behind the troublesome behavior of young people. Besides truancy, there are four other common status offenses: breaking curfew, underage drinking, being incorrigible or ungovernable, and running away. Status offense complaints against juveniles reached their peak in the early 2000s and have been on the decline. But Kentucky still detains juveniles who refuse to follow a judge's order more than any other state except Washington, which is now phasing it out. The Fayette Regional Juvenile Detention Center in Lexington, Kentucky, is just down the road from the horse stables at a nearby adult prison. On this day, six of the 40 detainees are females. One is serving 30 days for habitual truancy and contempt of court. Superintendent Alicia Stanley leads the way down the yellow cinder block hallways.
We had a new kid come in just a little while ago, and I heard someone getting ready to be released.
About half the states in the country don't detain kids for status offenses. Others, and the District of Columbia, do under what's called a valid court order exception. That means if a kid doesn't follow what a judge tells her to do, she can be detained. Quite often, the cases are dismissed. In 2014, Kentucky passed a law overhauling its juvenile justice system. That year, it jailed nearly 800 status offenders. Kentucky State Senator Whitney Westerfield, a chief sponsor of the legislation, says now the state offers services first to troubled youth to get to the underlying issues.
Then we have diverted youth away from the system as much as possible to various resources, depending on where you are, and depending on each child's situation. But we've done our best to try to keep the kid from ever coming in the door.
2 years ago, the number of status offenders detained in Kentucky had dropped to less than 400, about half of them girls. Those detained most often are runaways. Nationally, that's the only status offense with a higher percentage of girls than boys. Juvenile justice experts say frequently girls are running away from abuse in their homes. In Louisville, Kentucky, 24-year-old Jasmine Faust stands in a grassy area on the campus of Youth Build Louisville, an education and job training program.
We've got the roosters and the bunnies back here and the little chickens.
Faust is married and has a young child, quite a different lifestyle from her teenage years.
My first charge, let's see, I was 14, and it was for drinking.
Faust says she was sexually and physically abused as a young child. She was later adopted, but Faust says as an adolescent, she began to have flashbacks and started acting out. Police picked her up for public intoxication when she was 14, months after she was sexually assaulted at a party.
And they kept me for 3 days. So I was sitting in the juvenile section of jail. And I got out, and I proceeded to lash out in any way I possibly could.
Kentucky's Justice and Public Safety Secretary John Tilley says it'd be difficult to determine whether status offenses are a gateway to more criminal behavior for girls since juvenile records are sealed. But Tilley says incarcerating them for low-level offenses is not an answer.
Because we know the research is clear, once they do have any touch with the juvenile justice system, it's far more likely they come back as an adult. And that's what I think is lost on some who think that, you know, scaring these young women, you know, these young girls straight is the way to go.
Some in Kentucky argue that part of the problem is recalcitrant judges who believe the valid court order exception must remain, that detention might just turn a kid around.
We get a lot of training on this. I don't know of any judges who believe that you should lock up kids to teach them a lesson, especially the status kids that we're dealing with.
That's Judge Lucinda Masterton, a Fayette County Family Court judge based in Lexington, Kentucky. Masterton says there's been big changes when it comes to status offense cases, and incarcerated kids are only in a facility for a short time.
Less than 24 hours. Frankly, if we had a better place to put them than the jail that was safe, we would put them there. We do have a detention alternative facility. But if they don't have room or if they refuse to take her, then our only option is the jail.
Whether judges order detention varies by county, and some argue Kentucky may have fewer options in rural areas of the state because there are only a handful of emergency shelters. Jasmine Faust says she understands the complications, but sometimes teens are teens, and Kentucky just has to provide more programs for troubled kids instead of detention.
Like me, you know, the things that I've been through, look at the outcome with my story. There's so much to learn that, you know, you can teach kids.
Last year, Congress did pass legislation that puts limits on the valid court order exception, but didn't get rid of it completely. That change could mean fewer juveniles will be detained for status offenses. But in Kentucky, lawmakers say a complete ban on incarcerations isn't likely anytime soon. Cheryl Corley, NPR News, Lexington, Kentucky.
Billie Holiday, I sing your blues. Bet your life against me and I swear to God you'll lose it. Motherfuck the cops, we still singing for St. Louis. Motherfuck the cops, we still singing for St. Louis. Motherfuck the cops, we still singing for St. Louis.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. In the 5 years that followed Michael Brown's death in Ferguson, some say meaningful political and policy change proved elusive throughout the St. Louis region. Yet the past 12 months have showcased big policy gains in St. Louis County government and some modest advances in Jefferson City. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum takes stock of how Ferguson activism is trickling up into the halls of government.
Many people around the country saw Michael Brown's death in Ferguson as the catalyst behind a new national civil rights movement. Yet in the years that followed, activists around St. Louis had to watch preferred candidates lose elections and some demands for policy change go unmet. But St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell has a message for those who contend that nothing meaningful occurred here in the last 5 years.
I would say, with all due respect, me sitting in this office now would be evidence of change. And in my opinion, obviously positive change.
Fueled by an alliance of largely black North St. Louis County and the majority white Central Corridor, Bell upended Bob McCullough, who was in office when a grand jury decided not to charge former Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson. After running on a promise to overhaul the county's criminal justice system, Bell is pushing for expanded diversion programs and set up a unit within his office to look into instances when a police officer uses deadly force.
We want to make sure that you're treated fairly, and I think people are tired of the reputation that St. Louis has as being one of the most segregated communities, and that we're perceived as having all these racial issues when there are a lot of good people who live in this community.
Change isn't just limited to Bell's office. Ferguson demonstrators like Rasheen Aldridge have been pleased with how St. Louis County Executive Sam Page embraced housing, criminal justice, and policing policies that languished under Steve Stenger's administration. This comes as Aldridge noted how younger people who either participated in or were inspired by the Ferguson protest movement got elected to state and local offices.
We're trying to do something different. We're coming in loud. We're coming in strong. And we may not be coming in like the good old boys just trying to play along and get along.
Progress has been slower in Jefferson City, where the GOP-controlled legislature has been hesitant to adopt changes to how police officers do their jobs. But Senator Carla May says she saw some movement this session in the criminal justice arena. The St. Louis Democrat pointed to how she was able to work with very conservative Republicans on paring down mandatory minimum sentences.
Some areas we are working together. White and black people are working together to heal those wounds. It's just not big enough.
As May alluded to, many people throughout St. Louis don't believe the changes demanded on the streets of Ferguson have had a big enough impact throughout the halls of government. The most glaring setback may be in national politics, where Donald Trump wrote a bellicose rejection of the Ferguson protest movement as part of his successful pitch for the presidency. Closer to home, former State Representative Bruce Franks encountered a wall of frustration when transitioning from being a Ferguson protester to serving in the Missouri House. The St. Louis Democrat was appalled by infighting among African-American political officials and dismayed that black political leaders and progressive-minded white activists couldn't band together to win major city offices.
We keep wondering why change hasn't come because we're changing leadership. We're not changing leadership at the top. We're not changing the leadership at the top of the city, at the top of the state, at the top of our national politics, right?
Gauging progress throughout the St. Louis region through election results or enacted policies may be a deceiving metric. It took a lot longer than 5 years for housing and educational racial segregation to fester and for racism and distrust to take hold among ordinary residents here. That's why some believe that politics is only part of a solution to a problem that spanned generations. Part of the path forward, according to Kareem Tefpo Jackson, is getting St. Louis residents more aware of black history and culture.
I think that political engagement goes so far beyond just voting. And if you're looking for voting to be the sole mechanism to spark change in your immediate life, then you're going to be waiting forever.
Bell says that residents need to continue to have uncomfortable conversations about inequity and systematic racism.
These issues have to be addressed as more than just African-American or black and brown problems. They have to be addressed for what they are, American problems.
Whether people around St. Louis take heed of Bell's advice may determine if the political and policy change that so many demanded in 2014 can expand beyond the St. Louis County Prosecutor's Office and into the rest of the region, state, and nation. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
This is Maryland Baseball.
The stories of some historic black communities in Montgomery County are being brought to light at an art exhibit this summer. Organizers say their past is often forgotten across the Washington region, despite Maryland's deep-rooted history and ties to the slave trade. But as WAMU's race and identity reporter Sasha Ann Simons tells us, that may soon change thanks to a new public collection of photos and artifacts.
An old baseball uniform that's been locked in a suitcase in Deborah Young's closet for nearly 2 decades is now on display for all to see.
I never thought it would go this far.
More on that in a moment. Young has held on to the uniform that belonged to her late father, Dennis Young. He played shortstop for the Scotland Eagles in the mid-1950s, representing the small black community in Potomac, Maryland. You won't find much information about the once active regional African-American baseball league. Though she was a child then, Young says she still remembers watching her dad and the Eagles play teams like the River Road Lions. At the same time, the communities faced racial discrimination. Baseball, she says, brought them joy at a difficult time.
It was black people getting together where they could play ball. And then afterwards, sometimes they would have dances after the baseball game.
Young unfolds a tall black easel and places on it a large poster she made filled with pictures of the old team. On one side, Young glued historic photos of the Scotland AME Zion Church, where many local families worshipped. Now, back to her father's baseball uniform in the suitcase.
It's kind of stained on the side. Well, it's starting to fade a little bit because it's gray with the blue lettering and everything on it.
Young handed it over along with his cleats, bat, and wrinkled baseball glove to students at American University. They've gone from being tucked away to neatly laid out in a glass case at an exhibit inside the university's Katzen Art Center. DeLon Justinville is a first-year anthropology grad student and curator of the exhibit.
We're trying to pair these artifacts with images of them to see how they were then and look at them now.
Justinville shows off each wall of the exhibit titled Plans to Prosper You.
For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord.
It's named after a well-known Bible verse in the book of Jeremiah that talks about how having hope in God will help to end your suffering. The showcase focuses on the River Road, Scotland, and Tobytown communities in Montgomery County in the 1950s and 60s. Each enclave was formed by free slaves and had its own unique cultural significance. Justinville says community members led efforts against racism and violence. Churchgoers from the River Road community, for instance, are still fighting to save an African-American cemetery. That story plays in a video on loop at the museum.
Today, the River Road African community has been forgotten.
Their homes have been replaced by shopping centers, their cemetery intentionally desecrated.
Justinville is clear. This project doesn't replace the work that grassroots organizers and local archivists have done over the decades. And he hopes visitors to the exhibit become inspired to uncover even more history in these communities.
Take this as a launching point for the next step. There are things that I can and will do, but there are things that anyone who's contributed, anyone who's seen this, can now get a spark of inspiration and take forward as well.
The idea for this project started in Professor Adrian Pine's class last year. Pine says the timing of its launch is critical, as African-American residents in the Washington region continue to be displaced by gentrification at the highest rates in the country. And Pine says she's proud of her students for pulling it off.
My students have gotten to know incredible people. They've learned how to do oral histories. They've learned how to do participant observation.
Pine says though the summer exhibit ends soon, some of the artifacts will be digitized and made available online. For former community residents like Deborah Young, that history is personal and the memories will remain far beyond an art exhibit. She says she hopes to pass her father's old baseball uniform down for generations to come.
I am very happy, and I know my parents are looking down right now, and they're saying, Deborah, job well done.
Plans to Prosper You, Reflections of Black Resistance and Resilience in Montgomery County's Potomac River Valley, will be on display until August 11th. For WAMU, I'm Sasha Ann Simons.
You know, First Ladies usually have a cause, and you've already said you're interested in speaking out against bullying on social media.
I think it's very important because a lot of children and teenagers are getting hurt, and we need to teach them how to talk to each other, how to treat each other, and to be able to connect with each other on the right way.
It's an ironic choice, since her own husband sent out a stream of pretty nasty tweets during the campaign.
Let's begin in the United States, where Donald Trump is facing a backlash over a series of tweets insulting a veteran African-American congressman, Elijah Cummings, and his majority black constituency. This all comes less than 2 weeks after Mr. Trump tweeted that four women of color in the U.S. Congress should go back to the crime-infested places they came from. Our correspondent in Washington is Chris Buckler.
Well, this was a tweet that was specifically targeted at Elijah Cummings. Now, he's one of the Democratic members of the House of Representatives who has been coming to the fore lately. He can be a very, very harsh critic of President Trump. And he's been described now by the president himself as a brutal bully, accusing him of shouting and screaming at the great men and women of Border Patrol about conditions at the southern border. Now, this all dates back to a congressional hearing which Mr. Cummings was a part of, in which he spoke directly to the Secretary for Homeland Security, Kevin McAleenan. And at one stage, he asked him if he would be happy to have his child sitting in their own feces and not able to take a shower.
None of us would have our children in that position. They are human beings. What I'm saying is I want to concentrate on these children. And I want to make sure that they are okay.
It's one of those moments that I suppose has caught the attention of people. It's clearly angered President Trump. And as a result, he has hit back, suggesting that perhaps Mr. Cummings should be looking at the problems in the district he represents as opposed to the problems at the border.
What sort of reaction has there been in Washington to this row, which, as you say, is fiery on both sides?
Yeah, well, you can imagine that the Democrats have struck back extremely hard. It is worth pointing out that the place that is represented by Representative Cummings is majority black. He represents a part of Baltimore, which is in the state of Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. And President Trump described it as a disgusting rat and rodent infested mess and said if he spent more time in Baltimore, maybe he could help clean up that dangerous and filthy place. Now, as far as the Democrats are concerned, they believe that that is racist. And Nancy Pelosi has released a statement in which she has criticised the president very, very strongly. And of course, the Democratic House Speaker has also been someone who's at the forefront of criticising comments recently from President Trump against four Democratic congresswomen. Again, it is the president and the Democrats clashing, and it's again the president being accused of racism.
Chris Buckler in Washington.
Carry me back to old Virginia. There's where the cotton and the corn and taters grow. where the birds warble sweet in the springtime. There's where the old darkest Harlem longed to go. There's where I labored so hard for old Massa.
President Trump has spoken of the horrors of slavery at an event in Virginia marking 400 years since English settlers established the first local assembly in the New World, a move celebrated as the birth of American democracy. Many Democratic members of the U.S. Congress from Virginia boycotted the speech, accusing the president of racist and xenophobic rhetoric. A local politician heckled Mr. Trump and held a sign reading, "Deport Hate." Our correspondent, Chris Buckler, reports.
In the grounds of historic Jamestown, archaeologists are still unearthing remnants of the past, when Virginia was a colony, not a state. It was here 4 centuries ago that the foundations were laid for what would become America. And David Gibbons, who's the director of archaeology at the site, says that's history to be celebrated.
Regardless of how you feel about government today, it started here in July 30th, 1619. Those first assembly members sat down. It all happened right here.
But it's a sign of how some feel about government in modern America that the commemorations to mark that moment have ended up in controversy and even a boycott because of the presence of the democratically elected president of the United States.
He does not represent the entire country, not by his actions.
Black Democrats, including Virginia delegate Dolores McQuinn, refused to attend because of what she claims were his recent racist tweets, including comments about 4 congresswomen of color, in which he suggested they should go back to the countries they came from.
What was said to those 4 women of color, it angered me because I don't feel like he was just talking to those 4 women. He was talking to me.
Mr. Trump's words were particularly sensitive in Jamestown because this summer also marks 400 years since the first documented Africans arrived on these shores.
My ancestors walked down this path that I'm walking on now, enslaved, stripped of their identity, stripped of their culture, their history.
Steve Williams works at the Colonial National Historical Park.
This shows you the progress, right, that I, as an African-American, have the title as a deputy superintendent in charge of making sure that we protect this site, to make sure that our stories are cultivated, preserved, and interpreted.
It was the beginning of a barbaric trade in human lives.
In his speech at Jamestown, Donald Trump made specific reference to that history of slavery, but his speech was interrupted.
Right here in Virginia, your predecessors...
A protester held up signs and said Virginia was their home and that the president could not send them back. And even as Mr. Trump boarded a noisy helicopter to go to Jamestown, he was forced to defend himself against allegations of racism.
I am the least racist person there is anywhere in the world. What I've done for African Americans in 2.5 years, no president has been able to do anything like it.
At the Jamestown settlement, visitors can see what this land used to be like. They walk around recreations of 17th century forts and ships and watch demonstrations by blacksmiths and musketeers. Many here felt Mr. Trump's recent attacks were offensive, but they didn't agree with a boycott of the commemorations.
Just because someone's coming doesn't mean you can boycott. You're still celebrating the birthplace of everything, and it's good to come here and support just Jamestown itself and a community.
And democracy.
And democracy.
Though on the other hand, we can certainly understand the passionate feelings that he is not representing what this country was founded on and the ideals that we hold dear to ourselves.
In Jamestown, you are given a glimpse of the past. And in that history of people and democracy, there may be lessons for America today.
Is that a real gun?
Yes, this is a real gun.
Do you kill people?
No, if some guy's hurting someone, I try to shoot him in the leg or something, just to stop him.
Mama says policemen shoot black people.
Is it true?
Is it true?
Is that true?
Yeah, is it true?
Is that true?
Is it true?
Just over 5 years later, we have a development in the death of Eric Garner, whose final words were, "I can't breathe," words that became a rallying cry against police brutality. Garner had been put in a chokehold after police confronted him over the alleged illegal sale of cigarettes. Daniel Pantaleo, the police officer most directly involved in Garner's death in New York City, was not charged with the crime, but today a judge is recommending that he be fired. WNYC's Cindy Rodriguez is breaking this story. She's on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
What are you learning?
Well, Steve, we've confirmed from a source that a judge has found Officer Pantaleo guilty of using a banned chokehold and not guilty of intentionally restricting Mr. Garner's breathing. And she has recommended that he be fired.
You said guilty, not guilty. So are these actual? Is this a conviction? What is this exactly?
This is a disciplinary trial. So this is an NYPD administrative judge. But it runs very similar to a trial in that it's a courtroom. There's a judge. There's prosecutors. There's defense attorneys. So the structure is very similar. Now, the difference is that it runs by a preponderance of evidence, not by beyond a reasonable doubt. Hmm. That's what the prosecutors had to prove. So there were two charges. There was that he used an illegal chokehold, and they had to prove that Officer Pantaleo acted recklessly and attempted to assault Mr. Garner.
So they found that he did, in fact, use an inappropriate means, an illegal means of restraining the man, but not that he had intended to choke him or to close off his airway. Is that what you said?
That's correct, Steve.
And so what are the consequences for that?
And so she has recommended termination for Officer Pantaleo. Now, this is not the end of it. So the way the process works in here in New York City is that this decision and the reasons why she came to this conclusion were both shown to both sides, the defense attorney and the prosecutors. Both sides have a chance to weigh in, send that back, and that ultimately goes to our police commissioner, who will then ultimately decide what to do with Officer Daniel Pantaleo.
I guess he has to decide how much longer he wants to fight this.
That's correct. That's correct. He could, like other officers before him, quit before our police commissioner makes his final decision.
I wonder if part of the difference here between this and the criminal proceedings is in that word preponderance that you use, the preponderance of evidence. When faced with the need to prove things beyond a reasonable doubt, both a local grand jury and federal prosecutors decided they didn't have enough to go on. But in this disciplinary hearing, the standard of proof was different, and therefore someone went ahead.
Right. That's correct. It's a lower bar.
What kinds of how closely is this case still being followed 5 years later in New York City?
Well, I think that it's being followed pretty closely, especially by the Garner family, who has been out every day at the disciplinary trial. They have been waiting for this decision for a very long time. We are still waiting to hear from them. And I'm sure that reaction will come soon. We're also waiting for a 1 p.m. press conference from the mayor.
Okay, so again, the news from WNYC's Cindy Rodriguez. In a disciplinary hearing, a judge finds Daniel Pantaleo, the officer in the Eric Garner case, guilty of one accusation, not guilty of another, and the recommendation, not yet final, is for termination. Cindy Rodriguez, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You know, I've always wanted to be a cop, but a uniform fit well, calm to the seams. Being in niggas, call the greens, and they discuss the politics of dreams. This is why I've always wanted to be a cop.
A former police officer who is a convicted rapist will not have his case retried.
An appeals court has upheld the sentence for former Oklahoma City officer Daniel Holtzclaw. He's in prison for the rest of his life for sexually assaulting and raping women while on duty. News 4's Chase Horn joins us now live with some new reaction here to today's ruling. Chase.
Yeah, Kevin and Jolene, lawyers for the victims say this is a very positive outcome. But the Holtzclaw family says their fight to free a man they believe is wrongfully accused is far from over.
These women didn't ask for this. These women haven't gotten anything because it's happened. You know, they say, oh, they're making money. They haven't received anything but trauma.
An appeal request by Daniel Holtzclaw denied. In 2015, the former officer was found guilty and later sentenced to 263 years in prison for raping women while on duty.
We know he's innocent. That's the big thing. He is 100% adamant about it. Our family is. It's tough.
Judge David Lewis of the Court of Criminal Appeals writing in his opinion, this case involves a sexual predator who happened to be employed, most unfortunately, as an Oklahoma City police officer. Those words hard to read for Holtzclaw's family.
He got caught up in what the initial investigator said after a one-hour interview, labeling him as a predator or a sexual deviant. How can a police detective even make that kind of assessment?
But Judge Lewis's opinion goes on to dismiss those claims, at one point saying Holtzclaw's job gave him the power to demand sexual acts of victims facing the unfavorable alternative choices of jail or detox. A lawyer representing Holtzclaw's victims says no one is a winner in this case, but he hopes the decision can bring his clients some relief.
They are suffering through what happened to them each and every day, trying to get back to a level of personal security, personal integrity, and try to heal as best they can.
Now, the Holtzclaw family says their next step is to take this case to the federal level, while the victims say they're just glad they don't have to testify again at a new trial and relive this experience. Live in Oklahoma City, Chase Horn, Oklahoma's News 4.
Come here, Susie. You remember me? Your daddy's friend, Henry?
No, don't!
And the Jeffrey Epstein saga continues. The registered sex offender who is known for connections to rich and powerful people like President Donald Trump and former President Bill Clinton is facing new charges that he exploited dozens of young girls for sex. You know that. But the story only gets weirder as more disturbing details about him come to light. An investigation by the New York Times found that Epstein was obsessed with something called transhumanism and dreamed of bettering the human race, as he saw it, with his DNA by impregnating 20 women at a time at his New Mexico ranch. This is according to at least a dozen scientists that Epstein reportedly confided in over the years. And joining me now is James B. Stewart, columnist at The Times, staff writer at The New Yorker, and co-author of the New York Times article this week, Jeffrey Epstein Hoped to Seed the Human Race with His DNA. James, welcome back to WNYC.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Good to be here.
So the headline of your article, and I'll read it again, Jeffrey Epstein Hoped to Seed the Human Race with His DNA, sort of prompts the reader to do a double take. I know I did. Is this as twisted as it sounds?
Yeah, I guess it is. I was originally probing his seemingly, to me, startling ability to attract many of the world's greatest scientists into his orbit. And it was in conversations with them that some of them started saying, well, there's something even weirder here, which was that he had these relatively elaborate plans for his New Mexico ranch, which, by the way, is very large. It would easily accommodate an experiment of this nature. And he hoped to somehow improve the human race by contributing his sperm.
Is transhumanism really just a more modern way of saying eugenics, or is there a difference?
Well, they would certainly say it's there's a big difference. To many, certainly the critics of it, is simply a dressed-up, more sanitized version of eugenics in the sense that it's aimed at using latest scientific developments in bioengineering to do gene splicing, gene technology. I mean, these were things that didn't exist when the old-fashioned eugenics, first raised its ugly head before World War II, and that's now here. So it has a lot of new sort of scientific trappings. But I think the goals are very similar, which is to, in the case of transhumanism, use scientific advances to somehow improve the genetic stock of human beings.
What does the word even mean? I mean, the prefix trans means across. Humanism refers to people. Do you get
it? Well, yeah, humanism to me was always a kind of this Renaissance idea of, improving the mind through education. And I think it's, as the name implies, it means, we've gone beyond that now. Transhumanism isn't just simply cultivating the inherent human qualities, but it's scientifically engineering the genetic code in order to make people more disease resistant, more intelligent, you name it.
Is there any evidence that Epstein had taken any steps toward making his baby ranch vision a reality?
No, I think the height of these of his confiding in people about his plans for that preceded his arrest in 2006 and his guilty plea in 2008. And as best I can tell, these plans, however, I mean, I have heard of women being approached to be the bearers, and that was kind of the other side of this experiment. There would be his sperm, but then he was being very selective about who these women would be. And so there were some recruitment efforts underway. As far as I can tell, it never went beyond that, and that the arrest and his guilty plea kind of brought this whole experiment to a close. But I hasten to say, we don't really know. There could be Jeffrey Epstein children out there in the world right now.
And your reporting comes from interviews with prominent scientists who say Epstein talked about this idea a lot.
Quite a bit. Now, he didn't tell everyone. I don't think he was so foolish as to believe that he could just be blabbing this to everyone. I think he cultivated particular scientists who had at least some interest in, you know, decoding the genome and talking and thinking about the implications for using genetic techniques to improve, the transmission of qualities from one generation to the next. So I think he carefully chose his audience. He knew he had a sixth sense for who would at least not immediately run the other way, or the minute he brought this up. And again, to me, one of the amazing things about this story is that so many of these scientists did not run the other way. Not just from his talk about, you know, seeding the human race, which is, you know, very grandiose and megalomaniacal, but these other harebrained things he would toss out that make, when on further reflection, make no sense whatsoever. And yet here we have supposedly the world's most brilliant people kind of eating out of the palm of his hand and hanging on his every word.
You say some of the world's most brilliant people. We should name some of these names. Stephen Hawking, Oliver Sacks, Murray Gell-Mann. Your article describes a time that Epstein chartered a submarine from his private island and invited Hawking to come along. How did someone like this, Epstein, you know, even make his way that far into the scientific community?
Well, I think, as in many of these cases of very successful and sophisticated people who are essentially con men, number one, he was very charming. I met him. He would certainly be a pleasant dinner companion. He was glib. He used language very well. But I think overriding all of this is that everyone thought he was a billionaire, which, again, one of the many myths about Jeffrey Epstein we now know not to be true. But when you dangle, when you add charm, seeming intelligence, and then you dangle the possibility of high-level funding for your research, no matter how far-fetched it may be, that is like catnip to members of the scientific community. Now, I can't speak for Stephen Hawking, who's, you know, is deceased, but many of the scientists told me that they went to some of these events because other, like, Nobel Prize winning people said, oh, he's brilliant, he's amazing, you have to meet him, and by the way, he very well might fund your latest research project.
And what was the timeline of these contacts with prominent scientists? Was any of this after he was a convicted sex offender?
Oh, yes. That was surprising to me, that even after being convicted, that conference in the Virgin Islands, well, that was the same year he was arrested. But there, he hosted several other conferences and had many dinners with prominent scientists after his conviction. And I spoke to some of them about, well, what was going on here? And they said, well, you know, he only pleaded guilty to soliciting prostitution. We didn't really know the details. And it seemed kind of like one instance. And by the way, there are far worse things. And they said they didn't realize it was with an underage person. And they all, absolutely 100% of them now, told me they're horrified by the latest revelations. They're embarrassed to be linked to him. They would never do it again if they had it to do all over. But nevertheless, they were willing to look the other way for many years.
Listeners, do you have any questions about this bizarre twist in the Jeffrey Epstein story, or comments, including on some of the science and scientific community contacts that is being unearthed through the investigation into Epstein himself, which obviously comes as a result of his grotesque sexual behavior and alleged violence And but here we are with these things coming out now. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Epstein based his baby ranch idea on accounts of something called the Repository for Germinal Choice, you report.
Right.
What's that?
Well, this was popularly known as the Nobel Prize Sperm Bank because it focused on recruiting Nobel Prize winners to contribute their sperm, which would be preserved and then used to inseminate women and, again, to perpetuate high levels of intelligence in future generations. Now, excuse me, it was an eccentric person in California who maintained this thing. There, you know, a whole book has been written on the so-called Nobel Prize Sperm Bank. I believe they recruited three Nobel Prize winners. When publicity got out about it, to the best of my knowledge, only one Nobel Prize winner actually donated sperm. But other intelligent people, or supposedly intelligent people, were recruited for it. And everyone who spoke to Jeffrey Epstein about it told me that he was quite fascinated by this and actually wanted and would have been willing to put his sperm into that. But it closed in 1998 and ceased operations, so that really wasn't an option. And that's when he apparently decided, well, he'd create his own version of this that would be using only his sperm.
And with James B. Stewart from The New York Times, co-author of this week's article, which you may have seen, called Jeffrey Epstein Hoped to Seed the Human Race with His DNA, Matt in Harlem. Matt, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Hi, James. Hi. I was a reporter for the Virgin Islands Source in 2006 and also the Associated Press in St. Thomas. I attended an event called, was it Seeking Gravity or something like that?
Where yes, that was the gathered, name.
Yeah, had gathered three or four Nobel laureates, including Dr. Hawking. I attended that event, and I was super grossed out. I met Mr. Epstein, and I went over and chatted with the Nobel Prize winners, and there was this sort of out-of-place teenage girl there, and I asked what she was doing there, and I expected to hear her say that she was Epstein's daughter or maybe even granddaughter, and she said that she was his assistant, and quite innocently, the words came out of my mouth, "What do you assist him with?" And she gave me a look that totally grossed me out. I was like, oh, God. The moment I saw it, I was like, oh, no. Anyway, all this to say, my question is, and I've been bugging my Virgin Islands friends forever about this, why has he not been charged in these other places where he lives and has almost certainly committed crimes?
To the best of my knowledge, other jurisdictions are investigating his activities and are cooperating in their work with prosecutors in the Southern District of New York. But again, I think a very good question is, why only now? You know, there was the Florida case that was resolved with a guilty plea to one relatively minor offense, and then it was dead. Nothing was going on. And it's only now that people have been probing this, despite, as you point out, disturbing evidence that goes back over many years, that not only in the Virgin Islands but in New Mexico as well, there were suspicious activities with very young women. And again, the brazenness, again, that he would have an underage woman, and there were more at these events. Again, the scientists told me it's just assumed, oh, well, they must have been older, but, you know, they knew he had some connection to Victoria's Secret. Maybe these were just models on hand, but they kind of just, like, you know, brushed it aside and didn't focus on how disturbing this was. But now I believe it is under investigation.
And even for yourself, Matt, if you were to come upon a situation like this today, would you as a reporter dig deeper to see if there was any rape or exploitation going on?
Well, this is I'm not sure how I can put this. My editor at the time was aware of Mr. Epstein's political connections and shied me away from looking into it, even after the allegations in Florida surfaced. I think, and I don't want to poke fingers directly at the Virgin Islands, but certainly in Florida as well and elsewhere, Mr. Epstein got a big pass from a lot of people. And, by the way, this was not my Associated Press editor. I would not speak ill of those people in the slightest. It was the local paper center.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They shied me away from looking into it further. Today, of course, I would insist. And I've spoken to the same editor many times about it, and that person maintains that they were doing what was right for the publication. His tentacles went pretty deep.
And a male editor, I presume.
You would presume wrong.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
Wow! Hey, yo, drama, hold up. Stop the motherfucking record. All right. I want you to Pondy replay, drama. Pondy replay. Let's give him one more chance, man. Run that shit the fuck back.
And a male editor, I presume.
You would presume wrong.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. The political implications and the money and the influence that people like Mr. Epstein have should not be underestimated. And so I looked into it by myself because, you know, I was there. I looked in that girl's eyes, and she had sort of she was a teenager. She was like maybe 17, you know, and she's standing in a bar. And I'm like, what are you doing here? And, I mean, it's the Virgin Islands, it happens, but, you know. So I looked into it myself, and I found the deposition that no one talks about from his procurer, if you will, where she points to a certain current president of the United States as being involved twice. And I know that deposition has been discredited to some degree, but it's there. She swore to it under her own free will.
Was that a current or a past president?
That is the current president of the United States.
Matt, thank you very much for your call.
Well, that's certainly interesting. The aura that anyone can achieve by being perceived as A, a billionaire, who B, is hanging out with both a past and current president of the United States is enormous. That's all it takes, really, to cow many people. And in this case, it seems the media. I believe also that on his staff in the Virgin Islands was the wife of the governor of the Virgin Islands. And you start getting into that level of political connectedness, and it's no surprise to me in a small, very small place like that where there's like one local newspaper, it's going to be tough to do an investigative piece on someone like that.
You don't have to live next to me. Just give me my equality. Cause everybody knows about Mississippi. Everybody knows about Alabama. Everybody knows about Mississippi. God damn. That's it.
A breakdown in communication tonight. It's the latest reaction to a picture that surfaced of some Ole Miss students posing in front of an Emmett Till marker previously riddled with bullet holes. The chancellor now says campus police first knew about the photo back in March, but apparently it was not shared with higher-ups at the university and instead sent to the FBI. The FBI did nothing because it determined there was no threat from the photo. On Friday, Ole Miss said it could not discipline the students because the photo was not taken on campus. However, it now says an internal investigation will determine whether more action needs to be taken.
A controversial photo has sparked outrage from Mississippi, including a Southwest Georgian native.
Our partners at WLBT in Jackson say reportedly the Justice Department is investigating. Here's a look at that photo from ProPublica. It shows three University of Mississippi students posing with what appears to be guns in front of a sign marking where Emmett Till's body was found in 1955. Now, we've confirmed with Deerfield Windsor that one of those students in the photo, Howell Logan, is from Albany and attended the school. Logan is seen on the right holding what appears to be a machine gun. The sign had been sprayed with bullets. Now, it's unclear if any of those students actually fired shots at the sign. Well, tonight we're hearing from local civil rights leaders on this new development. WALB News 10's Asia Wilton joins us live in the newsroom with more. Asia.
Well, it's not just civil rights leaders who are upset about this photo. In fact, many people of all races say they can't believe a South Georgia native, now a University of Mississippi student, is linked in this controversy.
I'm numb to anger. I think it's some kind of a shock.
This controversial picture in front of Emmett Till's memorial in Mississippi is sending shockwaves around the country, especially in South Georgia. A big reason is because one of the men in the picture is reportedly an Albany native.
I feel like it's crazy, being honest, because we never had nothing like that close to here. Somebody graduating from Albany.
Different Windsor leaders say Howell Logan graduated from their school in 2017. Logan is seen on the right with a gun in his hand. The sign they're in front of marks the spot where Till's body was found after he was murdered for allegedly whistling at a white woman in 1955.
The memory of Emmett Till is one that is revered and should have been kept sacred.
This photo of the three students from Ole Miss surfaced in front of that sign last week. It's been ridden with bullets in years past. Till's family is angry, saying the historical marker shouldn't be made fun of.
It's not a plaything when it comes to us. It's serious. We loved our relative.
It's still unclear if the students actually fired shots at the sign. The fraternity the three students are in at Ole Miss suspended them.
The mockery of that person in any manner, to think that that's folly and fun, I think is a sick mind.
Whether the students harmed the memorial is reportedly being investigated by the Justice Department. But for now, residents wish folks would respect this piece of history.
That's wrong on several occasions because they wouldn't want nobody holding guns over somebody they love or one of their loved ones.
Now, I've been on the phone all day trying to track down if Logan's family has an attorney. I've also reached out to Logan's family and have not heard back yet. Now, I am learning that there is a new Till Memorial sign going up, and it's going to be created very soon with bulletproof. We are going to continue to follow this story, and as things develop, we will bring you the latest. For now, live in the newsroom, Asia Wilson, WAOB News.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Saturday, August 3rd, 2019. So I have been told. This is our weekly compensatory call-in. Dial in if you have thoughts, suggestions, questions to share with listeners. The number is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Few things before we get to the callers. Wow. I'm going to start with the youth sports and football. I picked that clip for a reason, even though it would have been constructive under even normal circumstances. They played the clip that was in California. Governor Newsom, suspected racist, he just signed the Crown Act. That was all about no more discriminating black people on the job. They can wear their natural hair and not be penalized. He just signed that and got lots of great publicity, even though I still have heard not one detail about how that is going to be enforced. But in Gavin Newsom's state, they just passed the legislation that you heard about limiting the amount of physical contact that young children who are playing football under high school, limiting the amount of contact that they have in practice. I would be all for getting rid of football altogether. I would put that up there with boxing, those two. Going to get brain damage. I don't think I've seen anything or all the evidence that I've seen. You're going to get injured if you play this game. You're going to get hurt. It's no ifs, ands, buts about it. You're going to get hurt going out there to get a touchdown. Boxing, that's another one. They could get rid of that too. Been lots of fun watching folks over the years who hasn't gotten in a good Mike Tyson joke over the years, but they could let that go as well. Just to plunder brain damage, watch a lot of black males brutalize each other for entertainment. Good on all of that. I'm totally cool with the legislation. They could even do away with physical contact all the way. No problem with that either. That was especially timely for me this week. So I've been teaching yoga in the park this summer. I thought I was going to be teaching this coming Monday, like in 2 days. Turns out I had to teach this past Monday. I was sick. I've been sick for about the past 2 weeks. I'm doing much better, almost totally, completely healed. But this past Monday, that was not the case. I was still not feeling very well. So I was like, man, I'm going to see if we can tough through it, get it done. Go out to the park, teach. Again, this whole summer long event about teaching yoga is a big priority, is to attract non-white people, especially non-white families, get non-white children to come out, practice, exercise, all of that, be healthy. Talk about that on the program here. So we had a lot of non-white children. They were very enthusiastic. They even knew some of the more difficult poses. I was super impressed both this week and last week. They were so enthusiastic. So we did the first class. Everybody leaves. Supposed to hang out at the park for like 3-4 hours. Hanging out after the first class. Can teach some more. Chill if nobody wants to do yoga. We're hanging out. Another group of children come through. It's a big park. That is so crazy. I was in the middle of my football anecdote and the Skype line disconnected. Not sure where they left off at. Zaniness with football. So I think the last anecdote that I finished, they almost trampled us on the sideline. Counselors moved the line back. Fourth example, same football contest. They end. They move to the sideline. They're recounting the day's activities. And they say, let's get out our tally. Let's see who cried this week. Now, 3 weeks ago, Jonathan cried. 2 weeks ago, Kwame cried. Last week, Heyru cried. And this week, little Ted cried. Now, I had only observed Ted cry. I sat again, appalled anew. Like, literally, you all come and play this activity every week. And every week, a black child ends up in tears as a result of this. And you all come back and do the same thing again. Like, woo, I am totally good. Like, if I never see another football game, I'm completely great. Like, if it's going to be that much, and like, I could not think of any constructive activity. Like, the benefit of this is running around. We could have just come and did calisthenics. We would not have had any name calling. We wouldn't have had any injuries, no cursings. Nobody would have been on the who cried this week list. We could have done calisthenics. We could have done yoga. We could have done hiking. Lots of things. We could have just ran laps. Lots of things that we could have done and not had any of the ill side effects of what I witnessed with that game, which, again, I understand is very, very common. But if that is a part of the gridiron experience, that and boxing, I'm completely fine with being done away with. Next on the list, football season is coming up abruptly, isn't it? They can do away with that too. Next, speaking of physical activity without harassment and anti-blackness, we hope, the Cows Yoga Retreat in Florida. Again, looking at December, specifically December 28th, was thinking 27th, but I think we'll do 28th, which is that Saturday, December 28th to January 1. Just looking at the scheduling for the place that I am thinking it's going to be, just waiting to get confirmation for that. Called Chef Nadira in Virginia to see if she's willing to come down, just making sure that those dates will work for she and her plans. Trying to make sure that we are in advance enough to not disrupt any holiday festivities. But it should be December 28th to January 1. Once everything is finalized, we'll have all of the details available. If folks have questions, suggestions for what can be included, things, activities that they would like to be engaged in Florida in December, in addition to yoga, vegan meals, counter-racist workshops. Certainly, I hope we can get some time outside. That was the whole reason for picking Florida in December, to get sun time, even though it is winter. But if folks have any other activities, certainly time in the kitchen. I think folks talked about that, to either give folks maybe an option of helping out with some of the food preparation or preparing a dish if they feel confident, or getting some hands-on time in the kitchen so that people are more comfortable preparing vegetables and veggie meals, or any other requests that you think would be great. Looking forward. Drop me an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, if you are interested. Looking forward to hanging in the retreat. I got pictures from some of the folks in Virginia from some of the healthy meals they have been making. I was speechless being able to encourage more Black people to eat well, to try to take care of themselves. I think my sign off for the email was use logic, eat well. Seeing folks as a result of the retreat trying to make that a more permanent part of their existence and counter-racist effort. Spectacular. But we're going to try to do it again. End of the year in Florida. Again, drop an email if you're interested, have suggestions, ideas, or just want to be included for more details. All of the confirmations to come. Let's see. Oh, I got another. I have personal shares. Lots of personal shares this week. My goodness. So I've been hanging my Black female friend. She is a mom, squared, two children, two small children, no less. I tell her all the time, Dr. Welsing's recommendation, that you do not have more than two children. You have them no closer than 2 years apart. My friend did not follow that suggestion, and she would agree Dr. Welsing is a genius. No more than 2 years apart. Woof, having them that close is super, super, add one more, super challenging. With all that, I've been hanging out with her while her partner has been out of the country. Woo! Exhausting. And I'm not even a parent. I'm just, you know, fill in, try to help as I can. It's exhausting just seeing her parenting at times. All of that said, she thankfully had other people who cared about her and her offspring. So they came to help out yesterday. She had literally like a house full of Black people. And she's not, you know, the most, what is it? They call it type A personality, where you know, invite 50,000 people to your residence. That is not exactly her either, although she's not totally a curmudgeon like myself. She had a number of people. They came to hang out, visit, be helpful, you know, help her get constructive things done. So all these Black people, part of me was thinking, these are not my friends. I'm going to sit here. I have a ready-made excuse. We got the compensatory call in. I need to work on getting clips together and all that. I was going to do that, but I did say, hey, I will go out, socialize briefly. I knew some of them. One of them actually is a yoga instructor, talk a little yoga, which we did. But I went out and we ended up talking quite a bit about racism. Got to be Gus T. I mentioned James Lowen's book. Somehow we got to entertainment, and I was going to leave and do my curmudgeon. They've been just odd topics came up, things that I would not have been able to easily participate in. And then it got to movies, and they mentioned the documentary film. I just saw the trailer and people talking about it, although I didn't see it. Documentary film about Black males in San Francisco. Got a lot of rave reviews, I heard. I'm not going to watch it. I asked them what they thought, and they said, well, there were no Black females. And all of the Black males that it showed, even if they had parents, their sexual orientation was kind of ambiguous. You couldn't really tell. You didn't really see them with any females. Wasn't like you saw them, you know, functioning as a husband with a wife or, you know, with a girlfriend or anything like that. You just never saw that. It was a little odd, they said. And I didn't even get anything out of my mouth in response. My friend who watched Black Mirror with me, we talked about that on an episode previously, she said, oh, it's just like Black Mirror. And I just looked at her and smiled and said, yep, that's another one I'm going to pass on. And so at that point, I said, yeah, I don't really watch films if they have a lot of Black people in them or they're marketed to Black people, because the racism and anti-Blackness is generally so intense in terms of how they're going to be portrayed that it's stifling. I just can't consume those type of products. So they started mentioning a few films, and I was like, oh, I can't. Oh, I think Black Panther came up and all that. So eventually, they mention Jordan Peele, Cowbell, and Us with Lupita Nyong'o. I'm not recommending this at all, and I don't care if you've seen it. I don't want to hear what you have to say about it. She said Us. And I paused because it took me a moment. I haven't seen this film. However, I have recognition with this film because my friend saw this film. And I remember she told me about it. And she said, oh, I was traumatized. In fact, she told me so vividly. She said, I was so traumatized by the images in that film that now when I see Lupita Nyong'o, even when she's not in that role, I'm still traumatized. And I said, eh, that's enough for me. I don't need to see that one. Another traumatic one. But she told me about this film, and she said, by Jordan, I mean, just the fact that it's by Jordan Peele, I don't need to know anything else. Don't need to see it. Victim of Racism, Tragic Arrangement, next. And so she says, there's a scene in this movie where it's got bodies hanging from a tree. And she said, I guess she saw it in the theater. She said, when I left, or wherever she saw it at with the group when we left, white people were coming out of the theater. And like, oh, that was just great. That Jordan Peele, wow, he's amazing. And she said, I don't think that they understand it the way that we understand it. Now, I didn't say anything that time. I had commented quite a bit. I had brought up racism, you know, a number of times. These are not my friends. So, you know, I didn't want to dominate, try and take over the conversation. I was quiet that time. Plus, this is someone who I see more than once. I said, I might see this person again the next time. I am going to bring that up. White people are not ignorant about racism. White people, in my experience, are way better at catching those type of images. And in fact, sometimes those type of hanging, lynching images in a film, that will be what attracts them to the project. It was so many ways I was going to take that. I was going to be like, do you remember The Purge? Because they got a scene in The Purge that is very similar where they have a tree and it's got bodies hanging from the tree. And I thought the exact same thing. I am sure white people, that was not lost. It's no coincidence that that is a multi-million dollar franchise with probably more films to come, The Purge. I was also going to mention from The Purge, the first one, Dr. Kevorkian talked about it on the program, the moment when Ethan Hawke's character, who shot Denzel Washington in the hind parts in Training Day, Ethan Hawke's character, he has the black male after he's been shot. And the white mob is out front of the house and they want the black male. Give us the nigger. Give us the nigger. And Ethan Hawke's character, he says, he's trying to figure out, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We got this nigger. We shot him. They want him. What are we going to do? He says, go get a rope. And Dr. Kevorkian, he said, just that line alone, that says a lot in the system of white supremacy. We got a nigger, black male. There's a problem. How do we solve that problem? Get a rope. That was one I was going to mention. I was going to mention the book At the Hands of Persons Unknown. Great. It was lots of different ways I was going to take that one. Without Sanctuary, lots of most of the books that I'm aware of that are about lynching that are really, really good, or I won't say most, but many of them, they're written by white people. They're not ignorant in it. It just stood out to me. It is astonishing that that is the default. It doesn't matter what the situation is. It doesn't matter what part of the world. The default is, if racism is being practiced in some way, shape, or form, white people are ignorant. Huge part of the problem. Next. In Maryland, the segment where they talked about Montgomery County. Now I'm getting to the news clips. Montgomery County, Maryland, and they talked about the history of black people living there, the black baseball team, and there, I'm deliberately not saying community, because if they had a community, then they would not be trashed and forgotten, and they would not be talking about, oh, wow, we had our black cemetery and it was totally demolished. I mentioned that specifically because we've heard that so many times, and that's another one in so many different places all over the world, black and non-white burial grounds, cemeteries, being deliberately destroyed. Oh, we gotta put in a landfill right here. I'm sorry that your grandmother is buried here, but we gotta have a dumpster right here. Or we gotta have a community garden. We're gonna put in a watermelon patch right here. And I know that your ancestors were buried right here, and this is a sacred spot, but we think that a watermelon patch would be a better use for this land. Worldwide, not just Maryland. And in this week, with all the attention on Maryland, let's see. The situation with Emmett Till, I thought it was significant. I think last week it was pointed out, and we were specific, that the school did not make any sanctions, did not take any disciplinary action against these white students, white males, suspected race soldiers, because they said it did not violate their policy and procedure, their code of conduct at Ole Miss. They're supposed to be reinvestigating. And then this week they came out with some tacky excuses that there was some sort of mishap with the communication, that the proper authorities at Ole Miss were not notified, that this information was just passed along to the FBI, and they did not deem it to be threatening in any way, shape, form. I reckon, if that seems feasible and or believable to you, my suspicion, were this a prominent white person, a marker for a white person, and black people had went out and were shooting at it and then posing, and it even looked like they may have been the ones who were shooting at this marker, at this monument, and gloating about their act, I'm pretty sure there would have been some violations. I could be wrong. It seems like the system of racism, white supremacy, they do not have problems taking punitive actions against black people anywhere in the world. Let's see. The Epstein case, I'll let listeners get their say on that. Oh, wait, I have a few other comments, but I will reserve commentary on those until we get later into the broadcast. For this broadcast, the compensatory call-in, I request if we could not use metaphors. That is very common in the system of racism. Race soldiers, whites, they will deliberately use a lot of cool catchphrases, comparisons, analogies, metaphors, similes. Frequently, they will take two concepts and contrast them and say that, oh, these are identical. They're practically twins. And frequently, that's not the case at all. Victims of white supremacy, including myself, we have been exposed to this deceptive use of language for many years, and we are still learning. If and what happens sometimes, we end up using metaphors in place of logic. Sometimes we haven't come to a conclusion, which is fine. But instead of logic, we'll substitute one of those analogies. And frequently it just contributes to a lot more confusion. If we could be direct, explicit about what it is that we want to say, that would be appreciated. I will prompt about that. Much obliged for watching what we say on this broadcast. If we could take about 5 minutes to share whatever comments, questions, suggestions you have, that would be appreciated. Make sure everyone gets at least one opportunity to speak. If you have additional questions or comments, we should have ample time once everyone has discussed at least once for you to get your additional questions or comments in. I did also want to make sure we talked about it on workplace racism yesterday, asking if non-white people, if any of the folks have configured a code for if you're expecting a child, you're pregnant, or your partner is pregnant, and you're on the job, have you configured a code for how you function in the workplace? What information you share, what information you don't share, how you deal with all of the unwanted touching if you're a female in this special time, how you deal or neutralize that in the workplace. That is a really unique period, those 9 months or however long if you're on a job, however long you're there until you take your leave. If folks who either had some understanding of counter-racist concepts while being pregnant and working, if you have ideas, suggestions that you think would be helpful, please share or take some time, think about it, write it down, and then share. If you're a male or a female, or if you did not have counter-racist information during that time, But you do have that information now, looking back on your experience and when you were carrying or when your partner was pregnant, things that you would do differently, things that you did that you think, oh, wow, I didn't have counter-racist information, but that was pretty codified, or, man, I wish I had known. I would not have done that. I would say this and not that. That type of information, I think, is critical and something that I wish we had brought up before, but trying to get the info now. Better late than never. Number again is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. First few folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, comments, questions to share. If we have attempted parents who are with us, you cannot be a spectator. If you figured out, thought about some codification, if you were employing it at the time or reflecting back, you have a thought. If you are a attempted counter-racist parent, definitely obligated to share on that one. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed. Let's see, I think the first few folks who dial with them in with a hand up, I'm not sure if they're spectating or getting their thoughts together while we're functioning. While they get it together, the folks who did dial in with hands up, the first segment, the people who were listening, was it the first segment? It was the first segment. The segment, it dealt with the use of the CRISPR technology. That was an NPR report. There was no video with that segment. However, the segment they were talking about, a patient, she was going to be one of the first, they were going to use CRISPR technology on her here in the States. I believe she was in Mississippi. They were going to use the technology. They said she suffered from sickle cell, and this was going to supposedly be beneficial to use this technology to try to deal with that problem specifically. Sickle cell, to me, that sounded like it would be someone who'd be classified as Black, a non-white person. But again, this is NPR. There was no video. So I thought that was significant just because we paid attention. This was something Dr. Welsing paid attention to. How is the CRISPR technology going to be used? What do folks think about that in a counter-racist perspective for that to be taking place? And it might have been used on a Black person. I did think that was significant. And even that being tied to sickle cell, that's something we talked about on the program before with Dorothy Roberts, how that can be another component of medical racism and saying that we got to have specific signs for Black people because Black people are prone to sickle cell, where Dorothy Roberts has talked about the evidence would not even support that either. I think she talked about that when she was on her third time. We talked about Fatal Invention, but neither here nor there. Folks who heard that, I think that was the first segment that we heard. It was certainly one of the earlier audio clips from this evening about the CRISPR technology being used here in the States and used specifically on someone for sickle cell. If you thought that was a non-white person or a white person, if you have a thought on that, that would be grand as well. The folks that dialed in with a hand up, you all still spectating or folks have comments, questions to share?
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Hope everyone's having the best evening they can have. I'm not a parent or attempting to be a parent, so I can't give any help on that. In terms of, I guess, the recent question about the sickle cell person, it could be a Black person, but I actually went to like a little sickle cell seminar one time, and it was given by Black people, and that disease does affect Black people, but it also affects what they call the Mediterranean area as well. So I don't know who the person is. They could be a non-Black person. They probably are a Black person, but it could be a non-Black person because it doesn't affect, it affects more than black people. I think they were like black people and people with what they consider olive skin tones or something like that. I think that's what they said. In terms of, I heard the football clip. I'm not saying I'm not a fan of football. My father used to play, I guess, semi-pro touch. You know, he wasn't in the NFL or anything like that. But I think it's good, but I think they're upset because it's going to change football. And, I mean, if they really want to make it safe, they could just, you know, get rid of them. I mean, not get rid, but black people stop playing. Then they're like, oh, this is all white people. We have to make this as safe as possible, just like if they wanted to have gun control. More black people will have guns, just like they did in California. They were like, oh, no, we can't have black people with guns. Gun control. In terms of the entertainment, again, I hope, you know, you're not watching as much as possible. And also, and I guess as a support of that, that video, I think it was a music video, This Is America, and they talked about how wonderful it was. And I knew something was wrong with it because I'm like, everyone talked about how wonderful this music video is. And I'm like, it's just a music video. What's so wonderful? As soon as it starts, the first thing happens is a black person shoots a bunch of innocent black people. I thought, no wonder they love it. So, yeah, that does tend to happen from time to time. If white people like something that's black, I'm sorry, I do get a little wary and suspicious of why. And I feel bad for that black person because they could just be being themselves or the best person they can be. But they may, white people may see that as a caricature or something of other black people, and that's why they enjoy it. And that's all I have for now. Thank you. Oh, one more thing. When you talk about the graves and things, I get that same feeling when I went to, I had that same feeling when I went to Hilton Head, South Carolina. I went there once. But seeing as my family's from, not Hilton Head, but from them Sea Island areas down there around Beaufort County, to me, and it could be also it was warm, it felt very oppressive. I didn't feel like going out and having a good time and celebrating all they've done there with the restaurants, because I went during the weekend and everyone was out and about and having a wonderful time. I really didn't feel wonderful. I felt kind of sick, you know, thinking about, you know, how people have, black people had that land taken from them and how they have had, they have resorts and things they've built up among the graves as well. So that's kind of how I felt when I went to Hilton Head. I went once. I have zero desire to go back. Thank you.
Well, much obliged. Thank you for sharing. Victoria Gray, she's 34. In Mississippi, as I said, they have photographs. I heard the video, or excuse me, the audio at NPR, but they do have a photograph, and the photograph that she has, she is a black female, victim of racism. If this is beneficial to her in any means, bravo. Solving problems without creating new problems. I wish that for all victims of racism, but this is something that I would be mindful of, and with a counter-racist lens in terms of what are they going to do with this technology. I generally don't see white people, racists, run with great technology to help and benefit black people. That's just generally not the way things operate worldwide. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, questions, line should be open. Proceed.
Greetings.
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to everyone. Sounds like you had a not too good, bad football experience. What was it?
Young people playing football? Anti-blackness? I'm not sure what to call it.
Okay, I kind of like briefly listened to it, But I correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was something involved with football that was interfering with your yoga program.
Just anti-blackness while they were playing. Black people were playing football. Lots of anti-blackness.
Oh, okay. Well, as far as my experience with anti-blackness, it can be associated with just about anything. You know, until we individually endorse what I think is best as a personal codified response to things that I say and do, that would kind of like remedy that. With me personally, football was a major factor, not the only factor, but it was a major factor in financing my means for college. Before that, you know, you had to measure up athletically as far as proficiency enough in order to qualify for such a financial achievement, and I was able to get it. And that otherwise, I either it would have been very difficult for me to go to college, or at best, I wouldn't have been able to go. I don't call it a free ride, as some people use that particular metaphor / slang, because every bit of it, you earned it through the work that you did. It is a violent sport. It is violence, a lot of violence that takes place in it. But if it's taught correctly, it can minimize a lot of the results of people colliding. I myself have been involved with it as a player or a coach since 1970. I'm 61 years old, and the most serious injuries that I've had, I've had a couple of concussions and sprained ankles at best. And as far as coaching wise, as far as experiencing players with the CTE type injuries, I don't know of any at all. And I've been a high school level coach since 1981. And I don't know if any instances have heard of it. And I stay in contact with a lot of guys that I've coached over those 30 or some odd years. But I do understand it does happen. As far as the professional sports is concerned, and I didn't say professional football, I said professional sports, period. If none of them actually functioned at all in the world, it wouldn't bother me at all. It wouldn't bother a retired firefighter at all as far as the NFL game doesn't come on TV. Because beyond college, I don't see the use for paying people to do something that is supposed to be fun. Also from the standpoint of the hype that goes along with it also. DCS program is in between sessions. The next session would take place in September. It is reported by Mr. Clark that he is going to vie for a professional political position in the area where he stays at. He is vying to become a commissioner. It'll be somewhere around in 2020. It'll be somewhere around 2020. in his area that person, it's a certain thing that has to happen. The person that is in that spot, if that person does what he says he was going to do, which is to vie for another political position that Mr. Clark says that he would vie for that spot. And I mean, what is there to say about professional politics? I don't see that it's an answer to the system of racist white supremacy, but there is. I do not say that voting is something that one should not do. I do vote on certain cases, especially local type of things. You know, get the streets cleaned, or the improvement in the area where I stay at, that sort of thing. I see where that has some viability. And I'll stay tuned if I get another chance and let someone else talk. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in that we have missed totally. I am aware of the shooting that happened in Texas. That was one thing I meant to mention at the beginning of the program. I am aware of the shooting that happened in El Paso, but that was happening while I was trying to get the information together for the broadcast. So I was trying to stop to look at that and getting this together. So I'm not really super up to date on the shooting that happened in Texas today. Again, the system of white supremacy demands these types of events. It demands violence. So I'm not aware. I think they said the shooter was taken into custody alive, I think, unless I got that information.
White male.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I didn't see photographs. So I didn't want to go there. I did see some people online were writing and they were talking about racism, white supremacy with this event, but I have not even looked at enough details to see the victims, who was shot, and all of that. So I am aware of the shooting in Texas, but I don't have enough information at this point to really say a whole lot. If listeners at this point have seen information or news footage that they think, you know, people should be aware of and maybe do some additional research, please share. Other folks, as I said, who dialed in and we missed totally, if you have a hand up, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Draftomania.
Greetings, Gus, and callers and listeners. In regards, I was just looking up the shooting. It was 20 people are dead and 26 were wounded in a mass shooting at El Paso, Texas Walmart on Saturday morning, according to the state and local authorities. And the unnamed official identified the suspect as Patrick Chris Kasai, according to the Associated Press. And they say that they did say that the suspect is a 21-year-old male who traveled about 650 miles from Allen, Texas to El Paso. So that's the information. That's all I'm going to read on that. And I just wanted to know if you had heard anything about this bill. The House unanimously passed the $67 million gay reparations tax bill. On Wednesday, the Democrat-controlled U.S. House of Representatives unanimously passed the controversial gay reparations bill that will entitle same-sex couples to millions of dollars tax refunds for their marriages, which were not previously recognized under the federal law. Pride, Promoting Respect for Individual Dignity and Equality Act removed sex while the Defense of Marriage Act, which protected state and federal governments who have recognized same-sex marriages from states that chose to recognize them to claim tax refunds for which they were ineligible. So that just passed, I think, yeah, this Wednesday. I wasn't sure if you heard about that, but I just figured I'd mention it on the call. And I was wondering if you received the email I sent you in regards, it was an attachment regarding that book, the book of the color line. Yeah, I sent you an attachment about that book. It was just I guess I was just trying to reference that book or trying to give it as maybe a book that we can consider reading, because he did mention Ben Tillman, and it was just discussing, you know, I think it was a lot of information in regards to white supremacy and how white supremacy, colorism, and just how the whole system of white supremacy works. So I wasn't sure if you got that email or not. And I just wanted to know if you had heard about that new bill that just passed. That's all.
Much obliged, Draptomania. I was able to hear you, even though your line was breaking up a little bit. The email, unless my memory is bad, I think I did get that email. I'll double check to confirm the color of wealth, but I think I did. I'll double check to make sure, because I think at least a few people have emailed about that book. Let's see. The bill, the reparations bill for gay people, I do not see. I see that they were talking about a bill that is supposed to amend them, I guess, having difficulty accessing some sort of tax refund that was denied to them. It's supposed to do that, but I didn't see anything popping up that passed. Do you have a specific name for the bill?
No, I am looking at a website called Activist Mom. You can go on her website, and it says the House unanimously passes a $67 million gay reparations tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from Oh, let me see. Give me 1 second. It says the Defense of Marriage Act, which protected states and federal government from having recognized same-sex marriages for states that chose to recognize them to claim tax refunds for which they were ineligible. So I guess it's going to be like all the taxes they weren't able to be able to collect when they weren't recognized as, same sex, they're going to be able to get all that back tax.
Even, I guess your question, had I heard about that? No. But even as I'm looking at it now, I don't see I feel like that's something that would have been bragged about. Like, that's something, I don't recognize the website that you got it from. And just as a general rule, like, that would have to be something that should be something that you should be able to easily triangulate. Like, that's something, I feel like the Washington Post, that would be front page. They would have the rainbows out. We just had Gay Pride Month last month. Like, that would have been huge news. Like, I am not really, unless other folks can, but I'm not really finding that, like, jumping out when I do a search right now. Like, I do see people talking about it, but I don't see anything that just, like, passed, like a check is going to be issued or something like that. Not that it would surprise me, but I just would, just because the website that you listed is not familiar to me, so I would encourage folks to maybe double check to make sure and get all the accurate information, because I would think that's a big one. Like, the New York Times would have that, the Washington Post, BBC, like, lots of the PBS, lots of those outlets would be talking about that big time. Other folks?
Another.
Oh, do you have something else?
The book I was talking about is called The Color Line.
The Color Line, okay.
Yeah.
I will double check and confirm that I did get the correct email, the color line.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have either more information on the alleged reparations, I guess, for a tax refund for LGBT rights, if you heard additional info on that, or if you have other questions, thoughts on what we've discussed thus far, your own suggestions, our line should be open. Proceed.
Oh, Gus, I just saw it also. I just researched it, and it came up under the NewYorkDailyNews.com. House passes legislation to give all married same-sex couples tax. Tax. Benefits of marriage, long overdue justice. It says for July 26, 2019. You can check out the website for the Daily News.
Awesome. I will share it on... that's out. I'll share it on Twitter and all the rest of it so people can check it out.
Okay, awesome.
Other folks who... What in the world? That is crazy. I'm just looking at the report that Draftomania mentioned. I'm trying to get information. They got Nancy Pelosi. That's what I was expecting. They would have Nancy Pelosi and some other prominent white people up really proud of something like this. But I was trying to get information on that. And my eyes just scanned the page. I look up and it says New York Police Department sergeant in multi-million dollar lawsuit charges hostile workplace and racist environment. That's the story at the New York Daily News. I didn't even get through the first paragraph of the story about the gay marriage thing. But racism, white supremacy, massive, and I don't think they're going to be giving out tax credits or anything else for workplace racism. That could be an error. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have questions, comments, thoughts to share, again, if we have attempted parents, you cannot be a spectator. If you have thoughts to share and we missed you, line should be open. Proceed.
Have you heard?
Greetings, Thomas in New York.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to all the callers. Man, I don't know what advice I would give to a pregnant woman who doesn't want to be touched at the workplace. I would never try to touch someone's stomach, you know, who's pregnant. I would find that to be a little evasive, but I have seen it done, and it's an interesting, I wouldn't know, how would you take that, like, you know, how would someone perceive that, you know, because typically women do touch other women's bellies, you know. That's a tough one. As far as August is always a month where I find a lot of white supremacist, counter-racist observations can be made. Often events that are talked about and written about for years to come happen in August. Katrina, Ferguson, Charlottesville. Last year, in August, a white supremacist went to a I don't know what you would call it, but try not to use a metaphor. An event where people play games and shot what appeared to be, he was targeting just black individuals. It was a John Madden football tournament where esports, they call that. Esports is a huge business. It's predicted to be larger than the actual sports business in the next decade, I find that to be very interesting that they went in here and just targeted those young brothers last year. That doesn't get spoken about, but I think in years to come, when we're kept out of the esports arenas, this is going to be one of those cases, especially with Google Stadia coming out, which will give like a standard protocol around all the gaming industry. Epstein, you know, he wasn't a billionaire. You come to find out that all this time he was financed by a billionaire, Lex Wexner, who owns Victoria's Secret, and has lent him or given him $5 billion over the years, different things. That he also, Epstein set up the Clinton Foundation. I didn't know that until last week. Also last week, come to find out, he was a member of the intelligence community. What would be perfect for the intelligence community to have a spy who's getting a bunch of billionaires on tape with little girls, you know, they could coerce that person now using that footage. Also, last week, a former cop who killed four drug dealers just happens to end up in Epstein's cell and is found trying to choke him to death. And when the COs get there, and just very interesting. He's really messing with the wrong people. He's got a lot of dirt on the wrong people. Now I shouldn't have said that metaphor. He has a lot of information that could be used against people who are very powerful. But in that clip, they spoke about transhumanism. It's a topic that I've done a lot of in-depth research on and search on. I'm searching myself. But it's more than just impregnating women. The best definition I can give for it is merging men with technology. And the device I spoke about last week that goes in your brain, the Neuralink, that's transhumanism. Cut off your arm and put on a bionic arm. You know, that's transhumanism. Virtual reality, augmented reality are forms of transhumanism. CRISPR is transhumanism. Cryonics, you know, keeping body cells alive after the person's dead, that's transhumanism. Plastic surgery and human enhancing surgeries are transhumanism. And surgical transgenderism. Look up this person, this white supremacist by the name of, and this is a great story, Martin Rothblatt, who is now Martine Rothblatt. He has a black wife. I guess you could say now she has a black wife. The wife's name is Robina, and the wife is also a robot called Bina 48, which is a black robot. And they have a son who is black, and he's the head of this transhumanism religion called Terrasum. I mean, this family, every part of their aspect of their life is transhumanism. But the end goal of transhumanism is also is called panhumanism. Look that up. That's the end goal of transhumanism. Another thing, that story that came out last week, transhumanism. They have it's called contact lenses that can change focus and zoom when you blink, move closer to reality. So the contact lens, when you put it in your eye, and you blink and you squeeze, and you open your eye again, now you zoomed in double the length of what you just saw. And you can also apply different pressures to reduce it so you can see smaller print. It's very interesting, but a form of mixed merging technology with humans. That's pretty much what, you know, you're seeing. Article this week said, degenerates, why are people recording themselves spitting in food and other disgusting things? A couple weeks ago, we spoke about the people licking the ice cream. Now these people are, and it's only black people for some reason, just like the ice cream lickers, who are spitting on, I'm on the phone, who are spitting in these foods at buffets and things like that. So I just think that's very disgusting and interesting. How come it's only us that's focusing on this? This week also, Pantaleo. Mr. Pantaleo, who is New York City officer that choked Eric Garner to death, played a clip on him. Well, people started chanting his name at the rally, campaign where all the politicians get up there and talk. It was for the Democrats. And you know, it ended up becoming a topic at that rally. And Mr. de Blasio, the mayor, he says, oh, within the month, he's going to make sure that, you know, Cincinnati is fired or whatever. So I guess he's going to apply pressure on the chief or commissioner. And like the report said, another commissioner just resigned his position as opposed to firing an officer for wrongdoing. So that could happen. But either way, I'm glad that it's become politicized. It got as high up as the Democratic campaign. Now, I guess I could wait until later to get into the Trump and Elijah Cummings in Baltimore. I did see the article about the gay people reparations. And what I took from that was just fancy wording. It's not reparations as far as what I would consider reparations to be. It appears that they were not allowed to put down, get certain tax benefits that couples get because they weren't, you know, because they were same sex, and now they're going back and granting those people the money that they filed it one way and they didn't accept it that way. So now they're accepting it that way. That's what it sounds like. But I think reparations is just something to get black people to focus on it and get emotionally involved in it. And I'll meet my line. Thank you.
Much obliged, Thomas in New York. I did think of you when I had the clip for transhumanism. I suspected your research in that area, you would have a comment or three on that segment. as far as the so-called gay reparations, Thomas in New York, that was similar to the commentary I was going to share after I had a few moments to check out the article. It seems, just since Draftomania mentioned it, I read the Daily News, New York Daily News report that she referenced. I was able to see that report, and then I was able to check out a different report. And when I checked out the New York Daily News report, they did not call it gay reparations. They called it what the name of the bill is, which is the Pride Act. That is deliberate use of words. Pride is an acronym. I can read it all out, but you can look at it yourself. But it's an acronym, and that's the word that they use for so-called LGBT rights. Pride Month was June. The separate article that I looked at, they called it gay reparations, but that was an opinion piece. Someone, a white person who had taken opinion against this bill in hopes that it fails. So he's calling it gay reparations with the hope that that term alone will have some white people like, ugh, I'm against this. So the white people who say that they're against so-called gay rights or what have you, they'll call it reparation. Like, this is like some nigger stuff. We don't, you know, we're not against that, or we're not for that. But what I think Thomas in New York, what he said is accurate. This is, it's a tax credit, just making an adjustment for people who filed their taxes one way. And I think what they were saying, they want their tax code to be in alignment with the law of the land and whatever changes that they've made. So that seems to me substantially different from quote unquote reparations. The other thing is that this passed the House. This is not a law. This has to pass the Senate, and then President Trump has to sign it, both of which may or may not happen. They were also saying that in the report. So I guess if anything, this is one folks can watch in the future and see what happens. The report said that they're not sure if it'll pass the Senate or not. They're also not sure President Trump could veto it. Even if it does pass, he has not always necessarily been a staunch advocate for so-called LGBT rights. So people can see how all of this unfolds. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, we've missed you totally. If you have commentary to share, proceed.
Have you heard?
Mr. Steele.
Howdy doody, everybody. It's Kev Steele. I'm in, I think it's Venice. I heard you guys were talking about transhumanism and the Epstein case, and I think it's pretty interesting that transhumanism has been discussed in the news as of late. It seems to coincide with the release of the action movie Hobbs and Shaw that's starring The Rock and what's his name? Idris Elba.
And the interesting that and it's interesting that you mentioned that being a 48 family, because they had Idris Elba playing some sort of supervillain that was the result of transhumanist intervention. You know, he was given the, you know, traditional black cybernetic enhancement treatment that is usually reserved for characters in these sort of action movies and comic strips. But it was really interesting that, you know, that they were talking about that, because it just seems to be a topic that is more and more in the culture. I was watching a documentary about what they were talking about, enhancements, the silicone enhancements that women are putting in their backsides as of late. And they said that in the future, the scientist or the doctor that was in charge of these procedures said that in the future, our children will not look like us. And then the documentarian asked, what will they look like? And then to which he responded, anything that they want to look like. So I don't know exactly what the end of all of this transhumanist technological intervention that's going on with the progression of the human race or the species, our species, but it's pretty much set that the people who are in charge and who are in charge of the rules and the policies, it's a foregone conclusion that we will have a future where non-biological intervention will be the norm. And I think that's why I think that may be some of the motivation behind some of the changes that are being proposed in the way that we perceive classifications, including race and gender. And I think that people are just trying to are working very hard to make it a reality that we can basically pick our avatar, pick our appearance, and enhance ourselves. I don't know if that's a good thing or if that's a bad thing. I do know one thing, that the people who are classified as white will use these technological advances to disadvantage, harass, and otherwise harm those who they classify as non-white. And I'm going to go ahead and mute my line. Thank you.
Much obliged, Mr. Steele. Encourage folks to be mindful of how all this new technology is being used. The number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If we have other folks that we missed totally, if you have commentary, suggestions, questions to share, lines should be open. Again, parents, be thinking. If you have codification, suggestions you would share, we are listening. Other folks who dialed in, proceed.
Amherst?
Yes, sir.
Yes, good evening. Good evening to everyone. I hope everybody's having a constructive evening. I just want a couple of things. I want to just, I guess, report. I don't know if it's particular to me. There's a great deal of interference with the call this evening. Some trouble connecting and trouble staying connected on the line. So I wasn't able to totally hear some of all the clips today. But I did want to comment on about the Emmett Till vandalism of the marker sign. Looking at the contrast as previously, I think you had covered it, where in New York City, the some females had mocked the statue of J. Marion Sims, and they did extraordinary effort to protect that sign, that statue, by moving it to a more secure location. I'm wondering if that should be done with Mr. Tears or marker. Also, just commenting on the coincidence. It was a coincidence because I'm getting caught up on the sundown towns, and I guess it's prescient that today I was listening to the, I think it was part 8, where you had the Oprah segment at the beginning, and echoed what Mr. Trump had said as being the rat-infested thing. And I thought it was interesting that it was a common theme or a common trope that, you know, suspected racists would use that trope as a common thing to denigrate the areas where, you know, victims are allowed to stay. And I was just like to, I guess, direct a specific question, if I may, to Thomas in New York.
What's your question, sir?
Yeah, I was just asking if what's his view of the recent coverage of what appears to be the black youth pouring water on law enforcement officers during the past heat wave in the New York City area. I'll mute my line. Thank you very much.
Interesting. Let's see if we can nab all the folks that we missed totally. And then once we do, we can swing back and see Thomas in New York. So the question, black children in New York pouring water on enforcement officials during the heat wave. What does Thomas in New York think about it? So we'll give him a second to think on it, come up with his response. While he's doing that, folks that we have not heard from at all, if you have questions, suggestions to share, proceed. Dang, I thought I had already. Sorry, having to go back to nab other lines. Let's see.
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Greetings, Imhondisi.
Yes, sir. Greetings, and greetings to everyone. I wanted to say a few things quickly, or a number of things quickly. The first is that we have to end white supremacy immediately, as soon as possible. I'm pretty sure in order to do that, you have to say it out loud. You have to say that I am going to end white supremacy. And you have to put a time frame on it. I'm going to end white supremacy as soon as possible. You have to put a time frame on it. The other thing I would say is there's a number of things that will end white supremacy. And here are some things that I would just suggest quickly. Exercise every day is going to continue to get hot. It's going to get hotter and hotter. And eventually it's going to get so hot that a lot of people are going to die. And if you're not exercising and drinking a whole lot of water, you may be one of the people who die. You want to be hydrated, but you want to be exercised and running in this heat. The ice sheets that are on either pole, both of the poles, the ice sheets are melting. When the ice melts, it will get a lot hotter than what it is now, and the temperature will increase pretty fast. Ice albinos, white people, ice albinos need ice to survive. They need ice on the planet because the ice will keep it at a temperature to where they can survive. So there's a number of things as far as the ice being on the planet. It's a number of things that will, well, heat will melt it. But then there's a few things that I would say. There could be like 1,000 black people go to the Arctic and take flamethrowers and melt that ice, or just strategically melt the ice, melt it. You could do that. And I watch my ice melt. I watch ice melt and I watch fire burn. And that ice eventually is going to go. We need more Black Americans. And I've said this before, that we need more births, more Black American births, not saying that we need more Black births, which, you know, that would be good, but we need more Black American births because of the genocide that was done on the people here when white people first, ICE albinos first came to this country. And then the continued genocide, our numbers are extremely low. And currently, you know, we're outnumbered in our land, ridiculously outnumbered in our land. And we have people from everywhere in the world in our land. We need more numbers. We need to be the majority population. And we need more Black Americans. The Black Americans are the ones who are the quote-unquote Pan-Africanists. We're the ones who are the anti-white supremacists. And there's other people, but we're full of engineers, lawyers, doctors, every profession there is. We need more Black Americans. We need an alliance with the African countries, and there needs to be a time limit on how soon that alliance needs to occur. This radio broadcast should be sent to your contacts. You should send it to at least 100 of your contacts. Maybe not this particular one, but pick one. Send it to your contacts. Send Dr. Welsing videos to your contacts. There was a Dr. Welsing video that I can't find on YouTube anymore. They said that it was deleted. The one that is titled, "Can You Protect Your Melanin?" It's deleted. I would like that to, if anybody can re-upload that, I'll be looking for it. We need to start a movement to end chemtrails. So then calling your politicians, organizing people in your city, organizing people online, end in chemtrails, stop chemtrails. We need a movement to deport people who are not Black Americans. White people first, but we have to have order here. This is our country. This is my country. This is my land. And we have to have order. And that goes back to the alliance with the Africans in Africa, and the African heads of state is who I will speak to as far as the alliance is concerned and what needs to be done with immigration and everything. We need to end all religions, and more people need to speak about it. There's a few people who are speaking consistently, and it's great, but there needs to be more people ending these religions. ICE albinos are white people. White people are ICE albinos. Albinos. That's all. Thank you.
Much obliged, Imhan DC. Wowee, that religion one, that is ambitious. The strongest religion in the known universe, the system of white supremacy. I think that one often gets left out of the conversation on religions and the problem with religions. The religion causing the most problems. Racism, white supremacy. Other folks we missed totally. If you have commentary, proceed.
Hello, may I be heard?
Greetings, Irie. Yes, ma'am.
Hello. Hi, everybody. And hi, Gus. I'm going to make it
quick because I'm actually doing my ride share thing. I just want to encourage people to remember and send positive energy to the non-white people that are still captive in Guantanamo Bay. We often have talked about mass incarceration and the detainment of people trying to escape white terrorism-fueled civil war in their home countries. But we have forgotten about the people who practice Islam, et cetera, non-white, Muslim, Middle Eastern people stuck there, maybe ultimately to their death. Some of them, you know, have been tortured to death. And, that's been, I want to share something else that I can't remember. I hope everyone has a good night. Let's remember to be patient with other black people. Combinations for juices and smoothies. Lemon will kill, well, not kill, that's a metaphor. Lemon will really neutralize sour tastes and flavors when you blend it with, like, any greens, spinaches, beets, and if you add strawberries and apples, that also gives it a nice sweetness and neutralizes, kind of gives it almost, like I said, a smoothie flavor that is more bearable than if you just mixed your raw greens together and tried it that way. So thank you, everyone. I'll mute my line.
Love the smoothie tips. If you're going to use orange in your smoothie, keep the peel on. I'm a big fan. More nutrients in the peel than in the orange, the actual fleshy part of the orange. And I only do that if you're going to get organic oranges. Other folks mm-hmm. who dialed in, if we missed you totally, line should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to just the host, the listeners and callers. My phone had went out when I think that was the news story earlier this week about Elijah Cummings, I believe, and the Baltimore comments. And there definitely seems to be a lot of deception going out. I suspect there was white people putting up videos trying to put other black people in that area as to saying that they agreed with the president and using the term infested. When you look at what was actually being said, it's not entirely accurate. When I guess he was mentioning about rats or something like that and rodents, and they were talking about drug infested. They were using the term drugs, but these issues are everywhere. So that was one thing that I noted earlier in the week. And there was another comment by a white person where they kept saying on the news about the Republicans are staying silent. It's like, why must it keep being, once again, categorized Republican, Democrat? And the white guy said, I don't think Mr. Cummings or President Trump are racist, but put the black person first because they are strategists with words. Why would you put the victim of racism first, as though you think in your mind that he is the most eligible to be a racist? So definitely a lot of tacking is there. And I also came across a story where I believe the white woman name is Tommy Lauren, and she put out a tweet about Kamala Harris saying how did she sleep her way to the top. Basically looked like it was some name calling going there. I don't think she said that she was a whore or anything, but that's pretty much what it implied, in my opinion. And I think she apologized or something. And my last two was, I saw a segment about the, it was a non-white person who, I guess, got attacked. He was wearing a MAGA hat, a little red hat. And the way they did the news segment was they had white people primarily who they call Trump supporters attacking people viciously. And a lot of black people were being attacked. And then they fused in video footage of other white people being attacked. And yet they showed this guy, one person, it looked like his eye was infected or bruised or whatever. So definitely deception going on there. And I had a person come in on the job who said she was a genealogist and she was looking for property or the name of someone on a property from the 1930s. And she said over in Putnam County, like in Merrill, Florida, she said it was some kind of black, she said black community. And I know that term is definitely not really true. And she says, she asked me where, I guess, you know, what my ancestry is. I said, I didn't know. And, you know, because you could go into like, what do you actually mean by that? And she mentioned something about 1870, and she has something called, it's an app called Find a Grave, okay? And I guess she used that to find the ancestors of different people. And she told me to write down a website called FamilySearch.org or something like that. And she said, she said it was affiliated with Mormonism or something, and said that, oh, that wasn't important. So I jotted all of that down. I forgot to share that one last night. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Affiliated with Mormonism. All righty. That is important. The report, when you were talking about President Trump, he made his comments about Congressman Cummings and his region of Maryland, and it's infested and rats and all that, blah, blah, blah. And then they went and they got black people, and they made it seem like black people agreed, and they were saying the same thing, although they were not saying the same thing. If you watch closely, like, they were talking about, oh, man, we got drug problems here and crime, you know, we got, you know, we're infested with drugs. Maybe they use the same term, but they're not quite saying the same thing. And I mean, opioids, hey, Seattle is infested with drugs. They did a whole PBS special on the opioid, what they call opioid epidemic, so-called, in this area. So, I mean, yeah, they could have picked a lot of areas, but they are very deceptive sometimes. That right there, context, that is in Neil Postman's book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, where he talked about you can be very deceptive with images and those type of video clips, because you can take short pieces of different segments and put them together and make something totally different where you have distorted the context a little bit or quite a bit sometimes. And that would be great illustration right there. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, anybody that we missed totally have comments, question. Thought I heard some background noise. If folks have comments that they want to get in and we missed you totally, don't wait till the last minute. Go ahead and get your hand up. Thomas in New York, did you want to answer the question that was posed to you? Did you have a thought on the black children in New York who've been dousing NYPD's finest with water during the heat wave?
Give me a few minutes, please.
Gotcha. Was there somebody else who had a question? Thought I did hear a line open for a moment. Was there someone else who had a comment, question they were going to share?
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call again. I was looking up the word reparation when the gay
I guess the gay reparation, I guess in quotes, was brought up. The definition according to Merriam-Webster as several, but one says the payment of damages. So I don't know if they were damaged. So I don't know if they complained or something. And then one says the act of making amends, offering expiation, which is another word for atonement. I had to look that up, expiation, or giving satisfaction for a wrong or injury. So I guess she decided they have been wronged financially. I don't know if they lobby, you know, everyone has a lobby, if they lobbied as such, and I would have to read more information. If that is the case, then the word reparation would be correct. In the denotation, I know the feeling we associated more with slavery and Jim Crow, which is, I would say that was correct too, because that was a wrong, but, you know, homosexual people, they chose to be in those relationships, whether you like them or not. You know, that was a choice that they make to marry someone. I don't think anyone forced them to get married, not that I know of, not that I've ever, never heard of that. And so with that choice, at that time, you knew what the rule was. So I don't understand why she would say that that was, you know, equitable. To, or there would be agreement that that would be equitable based on a choice that you did not have to make. You know, I did not decide to be black. I don't hate it. You would think I would with all the things we hear about, but I don't hate it. But that was not my decision, nor my mother's decision, grandma, grandfather, so on and so forth. So I can see where people would say yes or no with that, but I think it's important. And again, I'm learning, it's retaught again, more listening to the show, to know not only the connotation of the words, because we, I think, are very familiar with that. We talk about those things, how certain words bring up certain feelings, but the actual denotations of the word, because a lot of times, especially if we need to make a legal argument, that would be, to me, the first place to look. The denotation of the word, because it would be easier, I believe, to enter something like that into evidence should the need for claims need to be made. And so I think we need to, you know, be mindful of that. And I think I found the video that the young man was talking about, Can You Protect Your Melanin? I typed it in the YouTube. It came up. It could be the same video. It's about 18 minutes. I emailed it to you. You can look at it. I didn't want to look at it now while we're going through the program to see if it's the same program. It says, Can You Protect Your Melanin? Dr. Frances Cress Wilson, and she is there. So it could be the same video. So I found that, and if that's it, of course, you can feel free to pass that on to everyone. Thank you.
Nice work. Lovely. Lots of things can be found, especially if you have multiple people who are willing to help you search if it's something constructive. Wow, you can get a lot of things done. I guess we'll see if that's what Mhandisi was searching for. We'll confirm. Let's see. Did other folks have question, suggestion? Still looking for parents. I appreciate Thomas in New York. He at least, you know, gave a thought. Still looking out for parents. You all can email those thoughts in. Wowee. Do we not have codified parents who, you know, wow, I'm pregnant or was pregnant and write out a few pieces of codification? Have we not been generating that on the cows? Like, oh, wow, that would be terrible. Other folks have comments that they want to make sure they get in as time winds down in the broadcast.
Can I be heard?
Mr. Steele.
Yeah. Quick question. Just a really quick question, and then I have the manifesto of the shooter that was caught in El Paso. So the quick question I have is for the previous caller who suggested that we take 1,000 Black Americans specifically to the ice caps, the two poles, and to use flamethrowers to melt the ice caps.
I'm just curious, where would one mount these flamethrowers? And then also, if they use flamethrowers, would they back up while using the flamethrowers? And then how would they get off the ice caps after melting them? I just don't know where they would stand to mount these flamethrowers. Anyway, so the manifesto of the shooter, it's entitled The Inconvenient Truth. And there's a few sections. The first one is about me. The second one is, labeled political reasons. Let's see. The third section is economic reasons. The fourth section covers the gear that he used. The fifth section is the reaction, and then he gives his personal reasons and thoughts. And I'll just read the first section entitled "About Me." Just a second here. I just gotta open Safari. Sorry about that. Okay, so in general, about me. In general, I support the Christchurch shooter and his manifesto. This attack is a response to the Hispanic invasion of Texas. They are the instigators, not me. I am simply defending my country from cultural and ethnic replacement brought on by an invasion. Some people will think this statement is hypocritical because of the nearly complete ethnic and cultural destruction brought to the Native Americans by our European ancestors, but this just reinforces my point. The natives didn't take the invasion of the Europeans seriously, and now what's left is just a shadow of what was. My motivation for this attack are not at all personal. Actually, the Hispanic community was not my target before I read The Great Replacement. This manifesto will cover the political and economic reasons behind the attack, my gear, my expectations of what the response will generate, and my personal motivations and thoughts. Okay, so I guess it's divided into what he's kind of terming as but it seems like he's trying to be objective. Like, objectively, it just seems like it's the best idea for him to carry out this massacre to avoid being replaced. Now, in the personal section, he says, personal thoughts and personal reasons and thoughts. My whole life, I've been preparing for a future that currently doesn't exist. The job of my dreams will likely be automated. Hispanics will take control of the local and state government of my beloved Texas, changing the policy to better suit their needs. They will turn Texas into an instrument of political coup, which will hasten the destruction of our country. The environment is getting worse by the year. If you take nothing else from this document, remember this. Inaction is a choice, and that is in all caps. I can no longer bear the shame of inaction and knowing that our founding fathers have endowed me with the rights needed to save our country from the brink of destruction. Our European comrades don't have the gun rights needed to repel the millions of invaders that plague their country. They have no choice but to sit by and watch as their countries burn. America can only be destroyed from the inside out. If our country falls, it will fall to the traitors. This is why I see my actions as faultless. Because of this, isn't an act of imperialism, but is an act of preservation. America is full of hypocrites who will blast my actions as a sole result of racism and hatred of other countries, despite the extensive evidence of all the problems these invaders will cause, can and will cause. People are hypocrites because they support imperialistic wars that have caused the loss of tens of thousands of American lives and untold numbers of civilian lives. The argument that mass murder is okay when it is state-sanctioned is absurd. Our government has killed a whole lot more people for a whole lot less. Even if non-immigrant targets would have a greater impact, I can't bring myself to kill my fellow Americans. Even the Americans that seem hell-bent on destroying this country. Even if they are shameless race mixers, massive polluters, haters of collective values, etc. One day they will see the error in their ways. Either when American patriots fail to reform our country as it collapses, we will save it. But they will see the error of their ways. I promise that. Okay. I'm against race mixing because it destroys genetic diversity and it creates identity problems. Also, because it is completely unhealthy, unnecessary, and selfish. Second and third generation Hispanics form interracial unions at much higher rates than average. Yet another reason to send them back. Cultural and racial diversity is largely temporary. Cultural diversity diminishes as stronger and or more appealing cultures overtake the weaker and or undesirable ones. Racial diversity will disappear either race mixing or genocide will take place. But the idea of deporting or murdering all non... Okay.
I'm sure it does. Folks can, I'm sure, study a tad more if they would like. Although from what I heard, if the manifesto that's being attributed to the El Paso shooter, we would want to Dylan Roof. He said, I consider myself to be very informed on racism. This fella here does not sound ignorant about racism, white supremacy, if this is accurate and, you know, what's been attributed to him with all the different areas and commentary that he gave. The only thing I'll add, I was not familiar with Jean Renaud Camus, C-A-M-U-S, Camus, I guess, Camus, the great or the replacements, the great replacements is the book that he wrote. Supposed to be another one of those right up there with the Turner Diary. Maybe we should check that out for the book club, The Great Replacements. I'll check it out and see if it's, you know, worthwhile. Thomas in New York, did you want to get your answer
yes,
to
the... Sir.
Okay.
Very interesting, that manifesto. The trend. I saw the guys. It was a few incidents in New York City, and they put it all over the news. The police were making arrests or maybe even telling the guys to turn the fire hydrant off in the hot weather. And they were being doused with buckets of water. I think that the police officers showed a lot of restraint. I disagree with doing that. I thought they looked stupid doing it, be honest. I mean, they were throwing bricks or bottles, or taking some shots. And, you know, I have a little bit more respect, but to sit there and throw water on them, like, what's that going to do? So one of my pile of articles here, I didn't even think I was going to get into, but throwing water on police would be a felony under the new bill by state lawmakers in New York. This is coming from the new AM New York. And so pretty much they held a big press conference the other day, put it all over the news, where the police or commissioner and this congressman are saying that, you know, this is a felony because we don't know what they're mixing in the water. What if they urinated in it first or, you know, put some bleach in it. So, you know, to protect our officers, you know, this is now a felony to throw water on the New York City police officer. So they did a pretty good job, Gus. I think put it on the news. Now, we always would do this if the police would come and try to turn off the hydrant. You know, they get it wet. You know, that was, you know, they're not just going to turn it off with nothing, you know. So what the police would do is they started sending the fire department to turn off the hydrant, which, you know, you're not going to throw the water on the good firefighters, you know. So, you know, when they came, it was pretty much, you know, you try to grab the cap off the front of the, you know, the cap that makes the water come out like sprinklers, because that they'll confiscate the cap, and then you know, then it's pretty useless. But yeah, that was what I wanted to say about that. So it's for and I have to invoke VGQ when I talk about Trump. Well, it was what he said, racist, absolutely, but. I mean, who else could say it? I agree with what he said. And if a black person says it, it has no power, you know. when we had the Freddie Gray case in Baltimore, we had a black mayor. I said this on the show, a black prosecutor, a black judge, a black chief of police, a black sheriff. I mean, it was everything was black. It was a total disaster, as I anticipated, because in the system of white supremacy, black people are not qualified to be in those positions. You don't have any power, you know. So, you know, as for Mr. Cummins, I saw his house got broken into the other day. A few other incidences. I saw videos of people in Baltimore where they were showing that they came through the neighborhoods and defaced the houses. But when you open the door, you could look right up to the outside. They didn't fix the houses up. They just put a new face on it. So when you ride through the neighborhood, it looks good. But the back of it filled with garbage, trash, rodents. I mean, and the people were complaining that he's actually down there fighting for immigrants. And look at. So, I mean, white people are the blame, but they give the money to these black people, politicians who turn around and give it. I would love to know where all the money that he collected all these years is going. Now, he knows who he gave it to now. White people are to blame, but he's there to get the money. They're the most funded district in Maryland. Where's all those billions of dollars? You know, that's what I would like to know. So I'll mute my line, Gus. Thank you.
President Trump said about Congressman Cummings, his house, the attempted break-in in his residence. Too bad. I love it. I love it. Another example of black male privilege. Where, yeah, you can just come out and ridicule. You can just pick a new black person, non-white person every day. Doesn't matter, you know, what their title is, office. You can just pick a new person every day and say whatever you want to. And people will laugh and guffaw along with you. Like, 4 more years, I have no doubt at all. You can, you know, put wagers down right now. 4 more years. Donald Trump, landslide. Take anybody, whoever you want to pick from the litter, anybody. Landslide. 2020, it's already a guarantee, no doubt in my mind. We'll be back. Check the Facebook page and or Black Talk Radio Network for updates for next coming programs. Should be doing yoga in the park on Monday. I will not be teaching, but I do think I'm going to go support a black teacher. If you're in the area, you can come and do yoga. If you are interested, should be lots of black people, including myself, hanging out this Monday. And you can drop an email, get additional information about what's going to happen. If you have I know we did have the caller who said he had problems calling in this evening. I got disconnected as well. I think we had at least one other person, so it might have been some interference via the phone line. But thank you for sharing. That does tend to be an occurrence problem from time to time. Suspect the usual suspects. Again, drop an email if you have questions, difficulties, can't find something in the archives, untiljustice@gmail.com. Thanks, everyone, for participating. I hope it was worthy of your Saturday evening. Again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I think that was Irie, I think, who was doing the ride share. I hope folks are driving safely. If you're out on the road, sobriety, make sure we are not making it easy for the Daniel Holtzclaws, Daniel Pantaleos of the plantation to cause us problems. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, passenger or driver. Let's do everything in our power to minimize contact. That, again, includes not being on the cell phone if we are in the driver's seat. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.